real quick.
Yeah.
Yeah, so.
Hey, if everybody would take their seats, we'd appreciate it. Then we'll go ahead and get started. So first of all, welcome everybody. Glad to have you all here. We've got a nice big room full for those that are listening in on the phone. So let's start around the room with some introductions. And Senator Whitsitt, it's good to see you again. You and I spent several hours together yesterday in Newport talking about transportation issues. So we'll be talking about different issues today. So let's start with you and just work our way around the room.
Just an introduction.
Yes, sir.
Doug Whitsitt, Senate District 28.
Kurt Melcher, Director of Department of Fish and Wildlife.
Ken Helm, State Representative for House District 34.
Michael Finley, Chairman of the Oregon Fish and Wildlife Commission.
Claire Pucci, retired.
Meryl Reddish, retired.
Nancy Bales, Executive Director at the Gray Family Foundation.
Keta Gonzalez, Director of the Center for Diversity and the Environment.
Paul Don Hefner, Oregon Hunters Association.
Mark Labhart, County Commissioner.
Rob Ball, Nature Conservancy.
Rob Morrison, Vice President of Global Marketing for Leupold and Stevens.
Mary Westland with Travel Lane County.
Kenji Sugihara, Executive Director, Oregon Bicycle Racing Association, and Oregon Tourism Commissioner.
Jim Martin, representing the sport fishing industry.
And Brett Brownscombe with Governor Brown's office.
Jim Owens, tired facilitator.
Roger Furman, Director's Office, Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife.
Christine Barniak, Legislative Revenue Office.
Okay, in the back of the room. Start on the right side over here.
Adam Meyer with Oregon Council.
Thank you.
Joe
Representative
Morning, Jeff Samuels, Oregon State Police Fish and Wildlife Division.
John Seaborn, Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife Fish Division. Chad Oregon, Public Affairs Council here on behalf of.
Good morning,
Kevin
Blakely,
Wildlife Division, Department of Fish and Wildlife.
Hey.
Good
morning,
Amy Patrick, Oregon Forest Industry Council.
Tom?
I'm Wolf, Travel Limited.
Good morning, I'm Sean Warford. I'm the new Executive Director for the Network of Oregon Wildlife.
Okay, and the people who are really doing the work here in the back of the room? Great, and I can't say enough thank you for your efforts, you know, the minutes, the tracking, all the stuff that you do. I just don't want that to go unrecognized. And on the phone we have?
This is Richard Whitman, Governor Brown's Natural Resources Office.
Now, welcome, Richard.
Scott Lewis, Senior Global Manager, Public Relations, Columbia Corporate.
Welcome. Anybody else on the phone? Okay, great, thank you. So if you'll pull out your agendas right in front of you, you'll see our objectives for today. Just want to emphasize that our overall objective, this is a really important meeting today. This is probably our most important meeting since we've been meeting monthly in January. Our overall goal today is going to be to finalize our recommendations, and they're going to be preliminary recommendations because we want to hear what the legislature directs us to do, but I'm pretty confident these are going to be preliminary recommendations and we'll get some direction from them, and we'll be presenting to them next week. So the objectives are to share stakeholder outreach results and assess the implications of that, to define and discuss outstanding issues, questions, and key decision points. And then what's really important is after we make those decisions is what are going to be our key messages that we want to translate to the legislature in the options that we come up with today. Discuss the presentation to the legislative committees. We are on both the Senate and the House committee next week, and then identify the process and desired outcomes for moving forward. So with that, I'm going to turn it over to Jim. We've got a few housekeeping items before we go into public comment. So Jim.
Good morning. Good morning. In terms of supporting materials, we don't have anything other than what we've shipped out to you. So three key things. One is a summary of the stakeholder input to date. Second is your responses to a request that you give us feedback on the funding alternatives. So you should have both of those. And then a little document called our draft report to the legislature. So those are the three key items. We did not receive communications from the public since your last meeting. Important, the coffee has arrived. So Beth was back in Chicago a couple weeks ago, and she got an opportunity to actually go to Wrigley Field and see the Cubs play. So I shared with her a couple of Cub things.
I knew it was going to come, Beth. So.
You know, does anyone know what they call winning teams in Chicago? Visitors. And what do we all have in common with the Chicago Cubs? In October, we'll be watching the World Series on television.
We'll give you a rebuttal, Beth.
So there was a newspaper article in 2009 that interviewed Chicago Cub fans that were alive the last time that the Cubs won the World Series, which was in 1908. So these fans are all 100 years in age or older. And one of them said something along the lines of, the first 100 years were the hardest.
Any rebuttal?
I'll stop there.
Any rebuttal? Okay, thank you. So let's do reports from the various committee members, and I'd like you not to talk about what you've been. We'll have a whole section on what you've heard from the various outreaches, but do you have anything any committee members would like to report on not related to your outreach activities? Anybody want to share anything? Okay, so I'd like to turn it over to Brett now. There's going to be a change in some facilitation, and so Brett and Richard are going to talk to us a little bit about that. So, Brett?
Thanks, Mark. Yeah, so some of you may have heard, and hopefully there won't be a change in facilitation with Jim, but there is a change with me. I'm going to be transitioning over to a job with the National Policy Consensus Center, and this is the Oregon Solutions folks at Portland State University working on a few things related to primarily sage-grouse and the state SageCon partnership efforts that relates to kind of local, state, federal relations around western lands and all the issues that brings in, as well as some forest work. And so I wanted to, you all may have heard, and I think want to reflect on that today, that I will be transitioning out. This is my final official kind of larger public-facing meeting, and I'm happy to say that because this effort is very important, and at a personal level, I plan to stay involved. I wanted to clarify that this is not a signal of when we sit down and I hear from the governor, she asks about this task force and how it's going. So the level of interest in the task force is still there. I'm making a transition that doesn't intend to send a signal on anything broader about whether the governor is watching this and cares about where it goes. And so I think, you know, as we transition, Richard will be transitioning into staying close to this task force from the governor's office end. So I wanted to, Richard, thanks. I know Richard's on the road heading down to the far corners of the state today, and I think Richard wanted to reflect a little bit on this too with the transition here.
Thanks, Brett. And first of all, I wanted to say thank you so much to all the members of the task force for the good work that you've been doing on these important issues. The Governor Brown recognizes that we've got a problem with long-term disinvestment in natural resource agencies. There's been a real narrative in the public over the last year, but also stretching back into prior legislative sessions of disinvestment and also shifting of the burden of funding some of these important functions from the general public over to folks paying fees, and that's raised some real policy issues. So she is looking forward to your recommendations here and looking forward to working with Force and the legislature to explore what's possible here in terms of new funding models, and we're looking forward to getting some early reaction from some of the interim committees next week in the September interim. Going to Brett's transition, I will be very engaged in taking the handoff from this task force and moving it forward. I'm familiar with OESW budget issues and have certainly worked those in the legislature in past sessions, so look forward to working with you all and making sure that the recommendations coming out of this task force get a good hearing in the legislature. So we'll stop there and see if there are any questions.
Okay. Any questions from task force members? Okay, I just have a comment. I think I can speak on behalf of the task force. We just can't thank Brett enough for his help. We've had a small executive committee that we talk weekly, conference call weekly, about the task force's work. Brett has been outstanding member of that group in providing guidance to us, both to me as the chair, to Jim, to Roger, to Beth and I, to Beth, and it's been very helpful to help craft the packages that we've come up with. He's been just instrumental in helping me personally with this process, moving things along. He's going to be sorely missed by us, but we've got good shoes to fill in behind us. I've known Richard for a long time, and he'll be a very good in the transition process. So, Brett, on behalf of the task force, I want to thank you for your leadership, for your work behind the scenes and helping us to get to where we are today. So thank you very much.
Thanks, Mark. Sorry, and on that, I just wanted to say thank you. Thank you all. I know in working on the governor's appointments, getting to know you and talk to each of you about this task force and the work, I really, truly appreciate everything that you're putting into it. And this is an opportunity to do something important and lasting and moving the state into the future around fish and wildlife and conservation and outdoor recreation and education and engaging a broader public. So thank you for the ongoing work, and I look forward to staying in touch with you personally and helping where I can.
Okay, great. Thank you. We've had two other people come in the room. Could you introduce yourself, please?
Hi, I'm Danelle Romaine with the Romaine Group.
Okay, welcome. Glad to have you here. So let's move into approval of the August 15th meeting summary. Any corrections or additions to the minutes?
I have one.
Yes, Rob.
At the top of page 3, it indicates that I said the Nature Conservancy Board had not been meeting during the course of the work of the task force. And actually, I think what I intended to say was that the Nature Conservancy Board hadn't been meeting while we had anything to report. So they have been meeting during the course of since January, but
okay,
we didn't have anything to report until recently, so they hadn't heard a report.
So Alicia will make that correction. Any other corrections or additions? Yes, Claire?
Also on page 3, the paragraph, I think I mentioned that it was the soil and water conservation districts that were meeting in October, but I found out this morning talking to Sean that the watershed councils will also be meeting. So we may want to just, to have accurate minutes, just say soil and water conservation districts.
Okay. Any other corrections or additions? So we'll assume that with those additions, the minutes will stand as approved. Okay, let's move to public comment. I show one person public comment, but of course, if anybody else would like to provide public comment, you're welcome to. So Tom Wolf, you've signed up. You could come up to the table and so we can get you on the microphone, we'd appreciate it. Yeah, that's fine.
Chair Labhart, task force members, for the record, my name is Tom Wolf. I'm the executive director of the Oregon Council of Trout Unlimited. I'm here to reiterate and discuss comments that I made at your last meeting, whereas Trout Unlimited supports not having an exemption on the tax surcharge, which we feel is the flat tax surcharge, which we feel is the best option of the two with all their variations that you're discussing right now. I just want to say, to explain something, and maybe this can give you an idea of my group, Trout Unlimited. I have been caught my first trout when I was 5, my first salmon when I was 8, shot and killed my first bird when I was 12, shot, skinned, and gutted my first deer when I was 17, killed my first elk when I was 20. I've been hunting and fishing almost 60 years. So you can do the math on my age. But so needless to say, hunting and fishing to me is very important. But having said that, both I and my group support strenuously the conservation of all fish and wildlife in Oregon non-game. And we work on that because what benefits riparian area benefits not only salmon and trout, but sculpins, frogs, snakes, whatever lives in the watershed. So I just am here to say that as you go forward, and it's always unclear to me how much influence you'll have on this, I hope that we can make sure that both the hunting and fishing community and the conservation community can work together on a solution. And maybe we need to retreat from the no exemption if that means a solution can be reached. Maybe we can come up with a way that license fees could be instantly dropped so that instead of paying the close to $100 that I spent this year on hunting and fishing licenses, that it can be dropped to make it more reasonable to people, because we don't want to add burdens to people that hunt and fish that may maybe $20-$25 at this present time is too much. And we don't want the hunters and fishers to walk away from the table. At the same time, we want to make sure that the conservation community, which is I'm also a part of, is happy too. So we need to make sure that in our discussion and where we go forward, that we're all on the same table. And this is important. I am close friends with many people in the hunting and fishing community. I'm close friends with many people in the conservation community. I work in coalitions with the hunting and fishing groups. I work in coalitions with the conservation group, because that's what Trout Unlimited is, a group with feet in both table as I am. And I urge that in some of your decisions and some of your discussions that if you could make a preference, the flat surcharge a preference, that you look for solutions that doesn't drive one party from the table, and that we're all working together when we try to pass this in 2017. And we also look for a legislative action, because frankly, I think that's the best short-term solution. It's going to be a tough sell. Whatever way we go, it's going to be tough. I'm not predicting that we're going to have great success. I think the flat tax surcharge is the best, but I have no illusions. And after July 9th, 2017, I won't really care, because I'll be out fishing and hiking in the Wallowas for my retirement. So, but I hope that you consider all these things that I said, and I hated to go on for a long time there in your decisions. And you also, I might add, I hope that you don't disband after this meeting, that you go on and continue to work on this. I know that probably wasn't discussed, but I think this committee needs to be involved in what happens in 2017. So those are my words. Those are my thoughts. Thank you.
Okay, thank you very much. Yes, come on up.
I'm just going to add on to a little bit of what Tom's wonderful advice. My name is Adam Meyer. I'm with the Oregon Conservation Network. Tom really touched on pretty much everything that I am interested in touching on. But I just want to really emphasize a point or two. And that's that the work that everybody here has done has really brought some ideas to the table that everybody can work together around. And some of the discussions in the last few weeks, I feel like, have changed that discussion to more of a split. And I really hope that this community thinks about this as a marathon and not a sprint, We can't be certain that 2017 will be our year for passing something here. We all hope it will be, but we need to be prepared for the long haul here and the long run. And if our community stays together, then we have a much greater chance of doing that. So I would really, during your conversations today and into the future when you're talking with legislators, really emphasize holding on to the pieces that we've agreed on and trying to build upon those, as opposed to having a conversation about what is at the moment potentially dividing us. So really appreciate everybody's work, and it's been great to work with all of you. And I hope that we can keep this conversation going as a community, as one community. Thank you.
Okay, thank you, sir. Anybody else? Anybody else? Okay, again, we'll have public comment at the end of the meeting, so if you hear something or see something as we're talking about throughout the day, you're welcome to come back at the end of the meeting and provide some more public comments. So now let's move to the stakeholder outreach. There's two things we're going to cover here. One is the status and the schedule of the outreach, and then I'd like to go around the room with each member that has participated in the outreach to provide some perspectives that they might have on the outreach. And as you recall, when we developed our draft proposals, our draft ideas, I should say, we felt pretty strongly as a task force that we needed to take these out on the road, talk to some constituency groups and other groups about, what do you think? Are we on the right track? Do you have any input for us? Do you have any advice for us? And so we have been doing that. For those of you who have participated in that, thank you very much. I think for at least the ones I participated in, they've been extremely valuable and really good input received. So Jim, you're going to talk a little bit about what we've already done, and then we still have some yet to do.
Mr. Chair, I'll be very brief. So there's a September 14 stakeholder outreach program memo that we've attempted to capture the input we received at the various outreach events. And let me echo the thanks to committee members who helped organize and participated in those events. Very much appreciated. I thought we got great input. And we have a number of additional presentations on the schedule. I don't need to run through those. But if there are other groups that you think would benefit and be interested in these recommendations, we have the roadshow geared up. We can do it. Let me know. But thank you for your efforts. And rather than me reporting on what I heard, I'd rather hear what you heard.
Okay, maybe we could talk about what's yet to be scheduled. You've got a few of those. We've got one this afternoon with
correct. We have this afternoon with
Travel Oregon,
and Rob is scheduling us with the Nature Conservancy. We have a presentation next week with the science team with the City of Portland. Brett had been arranging a presentation to the Environmental Justice Task Force for December. Still trying to get in to AOI and Oregon Business Association. And our chair made the mistake of turning his calendar over to me, so I've got him booked in several additional presentations next week, in addition to legislative presentations.
Yeah, and thanks to Malia, we're going to be talking to the Coastal Caucus next week, too. So that's the Coastal Legislators at 7 a.m. Next week for a short presentation for them. So I appreciate you squeaking us in there. Talk to that group. So. Okay, so now let's have the task force members share their perspectives with us on what they've heard from the outreach. Part of this sharing should be your thoughts about the implications of the input of the recommendation. So,
and Mr. Chair, let me just interrupt. So there are a couple additional presentations that aren't on the schedule. They came in after I put it together. Merrill's scheduled with the...
I actually was just wondering, and it just occurred to me, if we thought about reaching out to the academic community, universities, and the colleges, and I don't know how to do that in kind of one gathering, but I think it would be helpful as the next generation or two coming into this to this world, and you know, the challenges and opportunities we're addressing.
Sure, and I have some great ducks and beaver jokes for later in the meeting.
So the answer to that question is no. We haven't reached out to them. So you're proposing that we try to do that in some format. I'm trying to think how we would do that.
Especially now as school started.
Yeah. I know I'm going to be with the president of OSU next weekend. I'm going to be in his box at the OSU game, so I can talk to him there privately.
I mean, any of those opportunities are good. Yeah.
Well, they're playing Boise State. So, okay, I can at least talk to Mr. Ray at that time. So, Claire.
Just a little update on the contact that I've made with the Soil and Water Conservation Districts. They are going to be having a statewide meeting October 18th through 20th. They are interested in having somebody make a presentation, but we haven't pinned down a date or anything like that. But and then I understand from talking to Sean that the watershed councils will be holding their meeting the same time, same facility. So hopefully we'll be able to,
Yeah, maybe we can work that out. So. Yep.
I will just say I have met with Susan Sano with OSU Extension. I am also meeting with Scott Reed and Susan and some of that large group with OSU Extension, and part of one of the agenda items on the table will just be to give them an update on this as well. I know that there's an interest especially in the environmental education and connecting people to the outdoors with this work.
Okay, great. Hey, Jim?
I'd like to report that we had a conference call yesterday of a number of members of this discussion group that we've been meeting with since we started the task force, and I've mentioned this discussion group before. We had five organizations present. I had shared with them the notes that Jim had given us on outreach from the Oregon Conservation Network and other organizations so far, and we honed in on what their recommendation for me to share with you was. We had consensus on of all the organizations that of the two major choices, they feel that the tax surcharge is the best of the two. We had consensus that of the two options in the tax surcharge, they felt that the flat tax was better than a percentage thing. Four of the five groups felt very, very strongly that all five groups agreed that low-income people should be exempt. Four of the groups felt very strongly that sportsmen, hunting and fishing license holders should be exempt. One did not. They asked me to reflect to you that it seems like most of the conversation on this most controversial part of the choice we have today is kind of circling around fairness. What's fair? Sports groups feel like they're paying the whole load now, and conservation groups are not paying that whole load, and then the conservation groups say, well, it's not fair to exclude sportsmen. And they just respectfully disagree. And I reflected that in some of my comments that you've all seen. But they also point out, and for people to consider, is the reason this task force exists is because of all the controversy that happened in the last legislature when they were increasing the fees, a historic increase in sport fishing and hunting fees. And the point is, beyond just the issue of fairness, there's the practical issue of, do we have a funding mechanism here where we're pricing ourselves out of the market and shrinking the base? And that's the heart of this thing. So asking sportsmen to pay $25 per person if you have two filers in your house, $50 more for conservation when they're already paying fees that are so high that a lot of people are just leaving hunting and fishing altogether, is counterproductive. Because what we're going to end up doing is shrinking the base, and most of the money is not coming from this proposal. Most of the money for conservation, even if this proposal moves forward, is still going to come from sportsmen and from federal funds. So they just asked me to relay to you that as you think about what the choice is about whether sportsmen are exempted or not, if it is our choice to follow their recommendation to use flat tax, they asked me to relay, not only is there a perspective from two different points of view about fairness and respect, but also there's the pragmatic and practical problem of essentially pricing ourselves right out of the market of hunting and fishing and shrinking the bays. And if we continue doing that, what's going to end up happening is we're going to have to go back for more general fund. We're going to have to go back for an increased surcharge to try to make up what is created by the loss of hunters and anglers. They asked me to point out that one thing that's really important in understanding the market is fees in Washington, fees in Idaho, fees in California, fees in other Western states, because people are increasingly mobile and have choices about where they're going to go hunt and fish. So they asked me to share that with you. Now, four of our groups felt strongly that the flat tax surcharge is the best and that sportsmen should be exempt. The other group that did not feel that sportsmen should be exempt did agree on the other points. So that's kind of the consensus of our discussion group so far in terms of recommendations that hopefully can assist with the decision we make today.
Okay, thank you. Any questions for that, for Jim? Yes.
Yeah, because I originally had thought about the percentage, but the more I thought about it, the more I realized that there were still a lot of questions in my mind. For example, somebody making $250,000, so a percentage, like a 1%, that's a big lift for that person, and to me, that doesn't seem reasonable. That said, somebody who's making $250,000, if there's a flat fee of $25, that $250,000 income is, that person is paying the same thing as somebody who's making $50,000, and I just don't see that as equitable at all. So I'm struggling with really what is the best balance here for the income tax funding scenario. And I think that the flat fee doesn't work for me and the percentage doesn't work for me, given the more I think about where people are in their income brackets.
Good discussion, but if we could hold off on the debate on which we're going to do. What we're trying to do now is just listen to what we've heard and provide that input, and then we'll move into, okay, now what are we going to do based on the criteria? So hold off just a little bit. Everybody's wanting to jump right in, but let's continue around the table on what we heard at our various groups. So, Kenji, have you had any output meetings?
Yeah, so we you met with right the outdoor recreation community up in at the Mazama. Scott was there, as Nancy was there too, and we had a great discussion with some great input. Some of the summary actually does a pretty good job of outlining some of the things that we talked about, but a couple things that stood out were, for example, one of the things that they brought up was, yeah, you're asking for money, more money, but what does it mean? It's like more positions, but there really needs to be a tie into the Oregon conservation strategy. And what does that mean, especially in terms of selling whatever idea we come up with to the general public? Because no matter which route we go, it's probably at least with the income tax surcharge, that's going to end up being on a ballot measure. One concern that was brought up, which has been brought up before this group, was there's a person and a couple people who mentioned this. They voted for every single tax that comes up, but when they took a look at the income tax surcharge, they looked at it and went, "Wait a second, it's like another Portland arch tax, and income taxes are already high, so it's another piece." So there was a little bit of resentment on that side. So that was a warning that sort of came out from that sort of demographic that was really interesting. But anything else that stood out, Nancy?
That was great. I mean, I think the as you mentioned, the marketing piece or the really understanding what exactly this money would go to that they're not already getting as part of that, I think there was still that disconnect. Like, that's a lot of money, and what are all those FTEs, all those extra FTEs buy? I don't think there's really that – didn't seem like even among this group, which would be a little more educated about, didn't really understand that disconnect with the conservation, the work that's not getting done by ODF&W.
But the discussion wasn't throw them out. The discussion was we need more.
Like, you really need to be able to sell this or help the public understand where that disconnect is. They believe that it's there,
yep.
But they just didn't, like, they personally didn't see it in a way that was really tangible, and especially in the materials. So
okay,
that was just
great.
A warning, I think.
So Rob, is this related to a question, or did you want to?
No, it's related to outreach.
Okay, go ahead.
Can I add one bit, Mr. Chairman?
Sure, go ahead.
I would also add that I think they thought that it might be useful for us to, as far as like the headcount question, to maybe show some comparisons with other similar states and size to show how that headcount related to other similar state agencies in other states. They definitely talked about the marketing, as Nancy said, and I think they also had a fairly strong message that they felt that we shouldn't bring a single funding solution to the legislature, but we should bring optional, and we should also be really strong about all of the different funding options that we considered and make sure that's a key part of our presentation.
Okay, thank you. Mm-hmm. Rob?
My outreach has been to the Oregon Business Association, the Oregon Business Council, and I have a meeting scheduled with their presidents on October 14th. And I'll make a comment about that in a minute, but I also have had a meeting with the board of the Nature Conservancy in which I made a presentation about what our work is and what our preliminary recommendations are going to be. And they referred this to their executive committee, our executive committee, with which I met a couple days ago. And two points come out of all of this outreach. First, I think Measure 97 is casting a very long shadow over mm-hmm. everything we're doing here and any recommendation that we make. And in both cases, OBA and OBC are completely preoccupied with Measure 97, are not going to address this until we have an informal meeting on October 14th, and then perhaps their boards will turn to this after November. And their attitudes toward this, even though they fully recognize that our funding model for ODF&W is broken, there's not a solution to that is viable until they see what happens with Measure 97. And in the case of the Nature Conservancy, they also will defer any formal position. They certainly support the work we're doing in general, and they understand the need for a new source of funding. But Measure 97, I think, casts the same shadow to the Nature Conservancy, so they won't take a formal position either until after November. And in their case, the broader natural resource funding issues for Oregon are of great concern. And we started talking about those in our first meeting. And, of course, our charge as a task force has been much more limited, and we've stayed within our charge quite appropriately. But the state has a broader issue, and there are several agencies affected by that broader need for natural resource funding. I think one of our funding possibilities is much more scalable than the other. I think a bottle tax is scalable, and the legislature may look at that as a possible source for broader funding than just for ODF&W. But I think this broader issue is going to cast a shadow as well.
Sure. Yeah. Okay. Carrie?
So I met with by phone with a couple of people from the Oregon Restaurant and Lodging Association. We had tried really hard to get on the agenda of the policy committee, and schedules just did not work. So ORLA is made up of restaurants and hoteliers across the state. It's really one of the largest employment sectors in the state when you add up all of those tens of thousands of jobs across the state and in every corner. And ORLA has a pretty active and effective lobby, so it was a group that we thought it was important to reach out to. I had Roger there on the phone as a factual backup, so I want to say thank you to him. And also, Jim, we had sent the overview handout out in advance, and that was really, really helpful. We did not have to spend a lot of time warming them up, and there were only a few folks. So because they are professional lobbyists, they succinctly stated the obvious to us, and that is that we have our challenges with either course of action, and they really see the income tax surcharge as probably generating a lot of a broad base of opposition simply because it is a tax measure, and they are in the business group too, so they have the same kinds of issues and tendencies that Rob just spoke about. On the other hand, with all of the things that are likely to happen this session, it may be the easier course because the bottle legislation will have fewer outright opponents, but they'll be all in on opposing that legislation potentially. And so that's the balance that we're looking at in terms of the two kinds of buckets we've identified for revenue generation. For ORLA itself, this issue is very unlikely to make their list either way. So good news for us that it's not going to make the list of things they're likely to oppose. On the other hand, they're not likely to throw in behind it because they have a very full legislative agenda. And just as Rob articulated, if ballot measure 97 goes down, we're going to see a lot of revenue generating proposals come forward, and they'll be working their way through all of those. So there was no guarantee on their part that this wouldn't make it onto their opposition list. They just felt it was unlikely given the priorities that they've established on other topics and what they anticipate will happen in this next legislative session. They did talk a little bit about the relatedness issue. They didn't see it inherently from the handout. They didn't get in the relatedness of how does a tax on bottles relate to conservation, how does a broad-based. So we talked about that a little bit, that we felt that this was a job for all Oregonians to share in, and then just the history of bottles and litter control and habitat protection. And so they got that, but we had to lead them there. I had to lead them there. That wasn't inherent.
They didn't tie the nexus in.
It wasn't readily apparent to them. They did suggest that we reach out to Representative Nathanson, and we talked about really what we're doing now are some stakeholder outreaches that we're not really, this isn't a public vetting. So that's a question that I have for you, kind of going down the road as we talk about academia and other constituencies. At some point we go beyond reaching out to stakeholder groups, and we actually are kind of publicly vetting this before we get to the legislative committee. So I'm happy to help if we want to do some additional outreach, but I don't know where we end up crossing that line. And then the other question that they had, as they looked at these proposals on their own in advance of the call, is they were trying to do the math, and that wasn't readily apparent to them either. Was this a per person amount? Is it a household amount? The actual math was not easy for them to grasp, and they were trying to give us good advice, and so they were trying to figure out how big a hurdle we were putting forward in order to give us some good advice. So I think that's kind of a summary, Roger, unless there's anything in your mind that you recall.
Any questions for Kerry?
Yes. Yeah, one, Kerry, on so in what you heard, the members or the lobbyists that you spoke to see any potential connection between the ability of this a new funding source to stimulate increased outdoor recreation and therefore increased restaurant spending or hotel lodging spending, or what did they not see?
So there at all.
Okay. We so did they not, didn't immediately say, oh,
yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, we did not have those kinds of conversations at all. I think they were probably really happy that transient room tax was off the priority list, because that's when they'd have to really weigh in against and fight.
Yeah, they're
just because they just absorbed a big increase last session, so they were happy that they weren't going to have to line up on the other side from the issue that we're trying to help. So.
Scott, anything?
Yeah, this week I was back in Washington, D.C., attending the Congressional Sportsman's Foundation Chairman's Luncheon as well as their annual banquet. So I had an opportunity to meet with our local representative for the CSF in D.C. as well as talk to some other senior members of the foundation, and they're broadly supportive of all the effort that's been put in by the task force to date. They didn't have any specific comments at this time on the funding alternatives, although there was a general consensus in supporting having the exemption for license holders as part of the income tax surcharge. Their I also had a chance to meet with some members of the Blue Ribbon Task Force at the federal level and make them aware of the work that we're doing here in Oregon. And there's representatives from Shell Oil, from Pure Fishing, and so forth, who are keenly interested in what we're doing here and how they can help support too when we get to a final recommendation. The CSF is willing to mobilize and commit their tools to help us get the word out once we get to a more formal and final recommendation. So broadly, good support from them.
Rob, anything else to add?
No.
Okay. So from my perspective, I've been meeting with four different groups. Jim and I tag-teamed with the EBAC, the External Budget Advisory Committee for ODF&W, and Jim and I tag-teamed on the conservation group. So while I grab a cup of coffee, you can report on that, and then I'll report on my conversation with LOC and AOC. So I'm putting you on the spot here. So what did you hear, and then I'll see if we say the same thing.
Okay. So, again, never give me your schedule because I will book it. So the EBAC, which is the department's External Budget Advisory Committee, is composed of a variety of constituent groups. So it's kind of a cross-section of groups, and we had 14 representatives of those groups. A lot of questions about the nexus with both measures. On the income tax surcharge, differences of opinions about the license holder exemption. And we'll hear more on that later, but generally making sure whatever direction we go there, we can clearly tell the story of why we've gone that direction. So if you have an exemption, why are we doing it? And how does it not adversely impact other parties and the reverse? So really clearly better explain whatever decision we make in terms of that. And more support for that than for the beverage container tax. There were some advantages they saw in the beverage container tax because we do hit out-of-staters with it. And and it could automatically be indexed to inflation. So they saw that as an advantage. But at the same time, it's easy to translate it as nothing but a sales tax on beverages. So whatever we call these, whether they're surcharges or beverage taxes, they were pointing out that there will be groups out there that translate it into tax. Their recommendation to us, and again, there were some differences of opinion about this, is that we forward a slate of recommendations versus a single recommendation. They specifically commented on the proposal to shift some of ODF&W's grant administration to the Oregon Watershed Council Board, Watershed Enhancement Board. Some concerns about that by the Cattlemen's Association. There were some concerns about that, making sure that if that recommendation is forwarded, that it's not being translated as ODF&W actually giving away any policy direction or any management of the grant activities. That it would be just administrative. Did I miss anything?
And I would say generally, you know, a fairly broad-based support for what we're doing, broad-based support for the direction that we're taking, being proactive, coming up with these solutions. Nobody that I heard was, oh, you're totally off base, you know, this isn't going to work at all. So Director Melcher, you were there. Anything to add? No.
Mr. Chair, no, I think Jim captured it pretty well, and our External Budget Advisory Committee, of course, is very familiar with the agency budget. They've been telling us, I would say, well, at least for my tenure in the director's office for 10 years, every EBAC budget development through the budget development process, they've been telling us that we need to, they've been putting forward ideas for alternative funding, and so I think they're fully supportive of this task force's work, recognizing, I think, as Mr. Ball put it, that we really need to wait until after November 8th to see what the realistic opportunities are as it relates to any alternative funding proposal. So.
Okay, thank you. So, conservation groups, same kind of a, I would pretty much parrot that. I think it was a really good turnout, really good discussion. We're on the right track. Keep up the good work. It's the devil's in the detail, of course. We look forward to hearing what you have to say. So I'm kind of looking around the rooms to some of the people that were there. I know Tom was there. There was others. Claire?
I thought it was interesting because the group was very supportive of this work, and I think that the group is very supportive of this work, and in the long run, I think that they'll get behind whatever, you know, is proposed. But back to some points that Jim Martin raised about the exemption, the possible exemption of hunters and anglers. There was a bit of discussion about that, and I think the group, correct me if I'm wrong, for those of you who are also there, was kind of mixed on that account. But as Tom mentioned in his testimony this morning, we don't want to create a setup. And one idea that I thought was offered, which we can circle around to later on if we wish to, and that is rather than an exemption, what about a tax credit? And I'm, for one, don't know exactly how that would work and how it plays into the amount of money, but that was thrown out towards the end of the meeting, and I thought that is possibly worth exploring as a way to honor the hunters and anglers and what they already pay into the system, but it's not an exemption, so it doesn't set up the appearance of we, they. I don't know. Mm-hmm. So, anyway, I just wanted to add that observation.
Kenji, yeah. Question?
Nancy, didn't they bring that up in ours, too, the idea of tax credit?
Yeah, I think that did.
Yeah,
come
so
up.
That was mentioned again in our group.
Okay. Yep. Any other questions on that one?
I'm curious for those who were there or if there's any other feedback from kind of where the conservation community is at this point.
I get the impression, and maybe somebody else who was there could speak better to this, that, again, there were differences of opinion about whether they liked the surcharge, tax surcharge, or bottle bill.
How about on the outcomes, though, of what would be produced? Is there any emerging consensus around, you're on it, what the Oregon conservation strategy
was? I heard is that they they need to prioritize. We need to prioritize. The department needs to prioritize implementation of the conservation strategy, have a science-based system with appropriate monitoring data outcomes and things like that. Yeah, that was very important as well. And then we got some good political advice about moving forward.
I don't mean to
go ahead.
Insert myself here. I think what folks have been talking about is really the core of the issue. There was a lot of pushback in our conversation about a tax exemption for hunters and fishers. And I think it's an issue that divides even our community because I think that there is a absolute recognition that hunters and fishers have been paying for a while and really supporting a system that has been good for the state. At the same time, there's a understanding that exempting folks from paying for a broad general good is hard to swallow. And so I think that there are ideas like this tax exemption or some sort of maybe reduction in license fees that accompanies something that I think people would be much more supportive of. It's, like I said, it's an issue that's difficult for our community to try to fully explain how we want to come down on it. And I think, to be honest, different organizations within the conservation community will come down in different places. But I think that there's definitely a desire to move forward however we can, but that some careful thought and consideration needs to happen there. Not just, I mean, there's the short term of just passing something now, which is obviously very important. And then there's the long term justification for who's paying and who's not. And I think both those issues need to be addressed. Because if we have, whether it's the conservation folks or hunters and fishers or any community backing away from this strategy, we're lost. We can't pass this. I mean, it's hard enough with all of us in. So I think that this issue has become a bigger issue in the last few weeks, and I think there are routes forward on it if we're thoughtful about how we address it. But I think that purely looking at it as an exemption or not has not been a fruitful exercise that I think folks would agree with. So open to more discussions on that. I know we're reaching the end of our tenure here as a task force, but...
Well, maybe not, but we'll see.
Anyway.
Okay, thank you. Rob?
You want more discussion now about the exemption, or do you want
not
to
yet.
Defer
We're
that?
Just kind of reporting on what we've heard. Yeah, we'll get into that next. So, okay, I also met with the executive director and the lobbyist for the League of Oregon Cities. I can tell you that it's not on their agenda for a high priority. Their agenda is PERS, education, transportation. They're going to watch it closely, but it's not something that they're going to fall on their sword with. They want to hear more. They want to be in the loop and watch it from a distance, at least at this point in time. Also met with the executive director of Association of Oregon Counties. Same thing, but I have a fairly high leadership role in the Association of Oregon Counties, so I think the executive director there, Mike MacArthur, is going to take the lead from myself and others about where the Association of Oregon Counties will weigh in with support for this. So you can kind of tell where I'm going to be on this. I'm going to be lobbying them pretty strongly for the position that we decide and carry that forward. So, Jim?
So comment that was shared with me at the Conservation Network meeting was that we need to be very clear that we're benefiting conservation and we're benefiting fishing and hunting equally, and that our message didn't convey that. So that was something I thought was a great piece of input.
Okay, thanks. Paul.
Okay, well, we met early on. I think we were the first one out of the chute, meeting with the sport group leaders group, which is composed of a number of different outdoor organizations: Rocky Mountain Elk, Oregon Hunters Association, others. Had a very constructive discussion. I think we get a lot of good feedback to Jim for improving the materials as they went forward with additional outreach. We had a really thorough discussion of the funding options, and at the end of the day, I think the sense of the group was that income taxes in Oregon are already too high, or high enough, and that raising income taxes any further was going to be a really tough row to hoe. If there was no exemption for the fishing and hunting license holders, I think it's a no-go for many of the people in that group, and I think it kind of echoes the comments that Jim Martin made earlier that sportsmen are already paying the freight, and without that, I think it's tough. Based on the other discussions that we've heard here too about the fairness issue, I think if there's no exemption for those, that whole proposal probably has a very unlikely chance of moving forward. The consensus or the preferred option out of our group actually was the fixed rate beverage tax, followed by the percentage tax on beverages, as opposed to an income tax surcharge or an income tax increase. So that's kind of where they came down, was more in favor of looking at the beverage side of it.
Okay, thank you. Any questions for Paul? Okay, Ketta?
Jim, Jim came and facilitated a session with African American Outdoor Association and CDE's Environmental Professionals of Color, which Tricia and I hosted. And we had a small but very engaged group. And at the end of the day, there isn't a preferred proposal moving forward. There were a lot of questions, about the value proposition, about, you know, the sort of history of how we got here. There were a lot of recommendations around the need to tell the story and to include more people in that story. A lot of opportunity for engagement of non-traditional communities in this process. There were a lot of questions. I think the level of curiosity and engagement was really high. The conversation afterward was really, really curious. There were some folks that just really didn't like either the proposals. Feel the burden of, you know, additional expenses on, especially on groups who paid disproportionate amounts of income for similar services. So that came up. Let's see. Yeah, a lot of opportunity and encouragement of making this. They want to understand what the budget is about, what people are getting. So that piece of it, and I think just curiosity. There would be support if the story aligned with community needs. Yeah, Jim, what'd you get?
I think you covered it well. It was an entertaining discussion.
Yeah. We're never boring.
Any questions for Kevin? Okay. Nancy, anything to add? You've talked a little bit. Any?
No.
Okay. Meryl?
Sure. I met with just Kelly Beamer, who's the executive director for the Land Trust Alliance, and just a couple of the things that I forgot to put into my notes. She was interested to know who or what other groups there would be that would be likely to oppose as well as support, but oppose more than support or stay neutral. And that she also expressed questions and concerns about shifting any grant oversight or responsibility to OWEB. So she had some concerns about that. I don't know if it was personal or she was I can't say that she was representing the land trust, but she personally said that she was in favor of the exemptions for license holders and that she felt strongly about resources put towards youth education for hunting and fishing, and that the Alliance would be supportive of either one of the proposals, and that they would support either one of them. She didn't mention about really the nexus. I also met with Audubon very briefly. It was kind of in the middle of August, so it was a little bit before some of the things got fleshed out. They also would be supportive of either funding proposal that was collaboratively supported and brought forward by the larger community. Clearly, they're interested in that funding mechanism going to the conservation strategy and the nearshore strategy and wanting to see accountability and measurable results as part of that funding mechanism. They're not concerned about the nexus. They're not supportive of exemptions for license holders. And then the final thing is I'll be meeting with the watershed management team and presenting to the watershed management team for Clean Water Services in 2 weeks. And I will report back on what their feedback is.
Questions? Claire, anything to add?
No, I think I
okay.
covered.
I think that pretty well covers it. So do we need just a short break, or do you want to just continue? Because we're going to move into about a 60-minute conversation about putting this all together now. So,
we're going to do something about lunch, or we need to order lunch? Or
We're not going to have lunch. So we're going to be done at 1, so you can go get lunch.
Oh, I thought
there.
We were supposed to go till 5.
Yeah.
No.
we're going to crank through this thing.
There's things over there.
Yeah.
There's lunch.
Yeah, there's lunch. There's lunch over there. A few okay. more croissants over there, though.
Great.
Okay, so now we're going to move into
maybe take 5 minutes.
Okay.
Because it will be it'll be a good hour.
Okay, so take 5 minutes, please. Just 5 minutes. Okay, let's call ourselves back together. So, as an elected official, I have to make decisions a lot of times, and so I'm going to read you a little scenario here that I think some of the other elected officials in the room can relate to, and you that aren't elected officials, you're going to get the opportunity to do this now. You're going to may have to make the tough decisions on which direction we're going to go. So here's the story. An old man, a boy, and a donkey were going to town. The boy rode on the donkey, and the old man walked beside him. As they went along, they passed some people who remarked, "It was a shame that the old man was walking and the boy was riding." The man and the boy thought, "Well, maybe critics were right." So they changed positions. Later, they passed some people who remarked, "What a shame. He makes that little boy walk." Then they decided they would both walk. Soon they passed some more people who thought they were stupid to walk when they had a decent donkey to ride on. So they both rode the donkey. Now they passed some people who shamed them by saying, "How awful to put such a load on a poor donkey." The boy and the man said they were probably right, so they decided to carry the donkey. As they crossed the bridge, they lost their grip, and the animal fell into the river and drowned. The moral of the story? If you try to please everyone, you might as well kiss your ass goodbye.
There you go, Jim. You better tuck that one away for the next group.
New benchmark for you.
Yeah.
No wonder you two get along so well.
So for those of you who are elected officials, or senator and representative, you can relate to that, can't you? Okay, so I'm going to turn it over to Jim now, so early Tuesday a.m. In the morning, you should have received from Jim what was a pretty thorough redoing of our earlier framework recommendations report. Thanks to those task members that did provide some comments to that. Special thanks to Roger for his work on that, and the ODF&W staff for the background information and assistance that they had with Jim in preparing this report, this draft report. Staff has been very busy translating and organizing the task force deliberations into a relatively complete document that you have in front of you. We recognize that additional work is needed in several areas, and particularly interested in your suggestions and input for that. So now Jim's going to walk us through the organization of the report, point out key areas that staff believes needs further discussion and direction. A list of topics is in no way intended to be exclusive of other issues that you may want to discuss. We're at a point of deciding today what is going to be our recommendation. So we've got the draft in front of us. We're going to go through the funding options. You each should have a copy of this. If not, Beth has extra copies for you. And so Jim's going to lead us through that process. So Jim, it's all yours.
So I scribbled a few lines, kind of almost haiku-ish. So finish line in sight, finally. Slow start out of the blocks, making this more of a sprint than a run, never a chance to catch a breath. Last hurdles just ahead, harder jumps just behind. Time to slow the pace, gather together for a collective victory lap to a race we were told was impossible to run. My thoughts. So we identified on the agenda some points that we thought we need to focus in on, starting with the funding need. At our request, the department came to us with a tiered program of funding needs. There were four tiers. I think last time we met, we had a conversation about condensing that to three tiers to, in that third tier of fully funding the mission, integrate the education and outreach piece that had been a separate piece. That was confusing. So we did that, and in the work group process, there were some recommendations to reduce the department identified funding need, which was, I believe, $86.9 million. There were some suggestions to reducing it, and so we followed up on those suggestions in this report and have identified a total funding need of $79.9 million. In other words, $80 million bucks is the funding need. And we explained on page 10 of the report how we proposed to achieve that, and really boiled down to reducing the estimate of the administrative costs of implementing all the programs for the full mission, some reduction in projected state police, Fish and Wildlife Division spending. There was a double counting, essentially. There were some reductions in projected spending on surveys and evaluation that could come out of the public education piece. And then the deletion of from the department's proposal for some alternative funding for hatchery operations and increased trout production. So staff's proposal was to bring the total down below 80 if we could.
Those are these are all biennial figures.
Correct. So this is important. We need to have you sign off on a total funding need because it then drives the various program improvements that are recommended in the document. And we ran with that $80 million and broke that out by a variety of programs that responded to the tiering the department submitted us. And then we articulated how those programs respond to the objectives that you identified early in this process. We were trying to make the case, if you will, that the proposed spending of this money met the objectives that this task force had identified. That's a piece here that we want you to weigh in on. Have we hit the funding need target correctly through these reductions? Do you support those reductions? And two, have we adequately explained the programmatic spending associated with that $80 million?
Rob? Well, my answers would be yes in both cases, Jim, but I would be hesitant to fixate on $80 million or 79.9 until we address this exemption issue that's on the table, because I think that could affect the total funding need. And I think it's a critical issue. It's been well presented, I think, today in terms of the alternative choices, but we haven't really tried to resolve that issue in terms of its actual dollar impact on licensees. For example, in the funding presentation, there's a $6 million item that is a shift by eliminating the third tier of license increases in 2020. And the benefit per licensee of that is pretty small. On an annual basis, it's $7 or $8, depending on the number of licensees. And the exemption we're talking about is substantially more than that. It's $25 or so. depending on what the level of proposed tax is. But I think we need to find a solution to this, because otherwise we're walking into a political split within the natural constituencies for this effort, and we don't want to see that happen. And I think either we need to have a group work on that separately, or talk about ways to resolve that. But some of those ways clearly could impact $80 million. And for example, if we were to try to find a compromise by eliminating the exemption, but also eliminating the second increase in license fees, that would add to the funding need, but also add to the benefit to licensees. And when Jim made his presentation, he said the fundamental issue here is equity. And I think I agree that that's the issue. We might all come out differently on what that is, but we need to find a solution. And I think we should pursue that solution before we fixate on $80 million, my view.
And let me just respond to the fixation on $80 million. Perhaps an administrative function. So we have legislative revenue here who helped us put together the projected amounts of revenue that would be generated by either certain surcharges or certain beverage taxes. What we really struggled with here was to paint a picture. So if you have a revenue target, be it $80 million, $100 million, whatever, in order to tell you what the surcharge might be or the beverage tax might be, we have to settle on that first. Because we can plug, you know, the surcharge amount in based upon where that revenue need settles. So that's why you've seen a lot of additions of this. There's a lot of nuances as well that we'll go through some of those. But if it's the department's originally recommended $86 million, that's a different surcharge than if it's $80 million. And yes, you're entirely correct. If there are exemptions, the surcharge is higher than if there are not exemptions. So that's why we structured the report to first focus in on what's the funding need, so then we could construct alternatives that responded to it. Just wanted to be clear about that.
Angie?
So, Jim, quick question for you. On page 11 of the draft report to the legislature, it says that there's $15.3 million per biennium that is proposed to shift funding for current conservation programs off license fees to alternative funding. Such a shift would make it possible to reduce license fees or fund other fishing and hunting related programs. The question is, how much per license would that decrease be if that was done with that $15.3 million?
There are some calculations, and you know, understand they're theoretical. Yeah. Find those. But the goal here, you know, one of the objectives you identified early on was could alternative revenues not only enhance conservation but reduce the burden on license holders?
Yeah, because that's
so
included.
These programs have been structured to do that.
Yeah, because that 15.3 is included in that $80 million per biennium, correct? Yeah, okay.
Well, we'll have to get back to you on the
In terms of the question, I'm looking for I don't have it in front of me, but the part of that 15.3 would be eliminating the third phase of the fee increase, which is already lined out. So I'll find that. I just don't have it in front of me. Kurt maybe knows some of the numbers off the top of his head in terms of a fishing license and a hunting license.
Sure. Mr. Chair, I would add to that. Here, this will put it in context. We currently raise about $100 million per biennium in fishing and hunting license sales. So a $15 million reduction would be, assuming you took it across the board on all licensed products, it would be a 15% reduction. Now, that may not be. It may be you focus on the entry-level license, and then it's so it's a meaningful reduction, but it all short answer is it depends on how you structure that in terms of all the different license products. And then the last thing I would say before I go to Senator Wood, I just want to, you guys keep, maybe I'm just a little overly sensitive on this, but you guys keep referring to the department's recommendation, which was the $86 million. And I want to make it clear, that was not the department's recommendation. That was our product that we developed in
we
response
asked you.
To you
yep.
all.
You're and, right. Thank you.
You didn't ask us for a recommendation, and so I just, I'm a little sensitive to that.
Yep. Totally understand.
Okay.
It's our recommendation.
Thank you.
Yeah. Senator Whitson, and then Claire.
Mr. Chair, before we get into debating the exemption and all that, depending on other comments on this piece on the funding aid, we'd like to walk you through the funding alternatives before you debate the exemption, because there's other aspects of the funding alternatives that you need to discuss at the same time.
Okay. So is it okay if he walks us through that, or do you have questions you'd like to ask now or comments? Senator?
Thank you, Chair Lepper. The question I have, I certainly think that the exercise of trying to limit the ask is a good exercise. Having said that, the hunters and fishers have been supporting the preponderance of the ODFW carrying the load since the 1930s. And two of the four reductions are in reduction in game law enforcement and reduction in fish production. I was wondering how you came to that conclusion.
Senator, we worked with the department to look to go into the originally projected revenue needs to look for savings, and we recognized that we had some double counting, potential double counting. So that would explain the Oregon State Police. And then in our work group process, there were a number of questions raised about line items related to hatcheries and increasing the funding for hatcheries. And so we responded to those.
By whom, Jim?
Task force members. So our Conservation Opportunities Work Group is the one that recommended that reduction. So we've reflected the direction they gave us.
And I guess I just want to clarify that for the Senator that that's not a reduction in current production. Well, that's
right.
Okay.
It's a reduction of increase.
It's
yep.
Exactly.
Yeah, it's a reduction of
the sure
increase.
That you're all on the same page.
And it was the attempt, I think, by the task force to address, you know, the objective number two, Senator, where we would look at, you know, one of your concerns was look at some potential reductions in the budget, administrative costs, those kind of things. And so that's kind of where we were diving into to try to address some of the concerns that you raised. So,
Mark,
Claire?
Yeah, just yeah. A further response to that with that hatchery issue, just to raise that, we discussed that internally, and those changes that were identified as potentially being funded through new alternative funding, those could be some of the enhancements that could be funded if we shift conservation programs off of current license dollars or off of license dollars, free up license dollars, we could increase crop production with some of that freed up money. So are there other ways to accomplish those additions without calling out addition, if there being separate line items?
Okay, Claire, and then Brett.
So Jim asked whether we're comfortable with this new figure, and I think up until a couple weeks ago I might have been pretty comfortable with it, but I received the link to the new Oregon Conservation Strategy, which is a marvelous document, wonderful. It's something that we do need to fund, but I couldn't help, unless I'm missing something or overlooked something, I couldn't find within that document kind of an implementation, how you really set up the metrics for measuring the success and whether ODFW, the state, is really achieving its vision, its mission, its legislative mandate. And I was wondering, within this reduced amount, would that still be sufficient to produce that separate document, which I realize is much more detailed than what's in a public document like the strategy? If it's not, then I guess I'm less comfortable with the reduction in the dollar amount needed that we're really striving to achieve. And I don't know if Kurt or Roger or somebody else can address that, but.
Are you referring to the reduction in the survey amount, that particular reduction, or what exactly? I'm not sure.
No, Jim had mentioned that the general reduction from the 85 to 79.9.
Yes, we can still produce that.
Is that the intent of the department to do that within that new reduced amount?
Okay, Brent?
Well, so I just, before you all get into debating where to land, it just seems like there are two kind of equity themes going on and behind all of this, and one is the equity issue around who's paying for values that they want this agency and its partners to advance, and that's where I was kind of listening for, you know, feedback or what the conservation community was saying, because I think the equity issue out there is those that are paying in through license dollars are covering the bulk of the program work, and there are those, and it's a consistent theme, who want to see the agency doing more conservation and implementing the conservation strategy, and the equity perception out there is, okay, well then those who aren't paying license dollars who care about that stuff need to be paying. And so solving that equity issue seems important to any solution. And then the other side of the equity issue of on fees is, and this is more a question for the hunting and fishing community, is it enough to do something that that stems the last phase of the 2015 bill, Senate Bill 247, and figure out a solution that indexes hunting and fishing fee increases to costs of management tied specifically to hunting and fishing, so something that kind of secures what the future looks like, in addition to avoiding that third phase of the increase, like I think Rob suggested. Or does the community, that community in particular, want more, or need, feel like it needs more because of the perception that it's already paying too much, and that gets at the exemption issue. So I don't know where it all shakes out, but that seems like the other end of the equity piece, and I don't know if on the shifts, what Roger brought up was kind of interesting. If there's a shift of 15 or so million off of conservation, or what the agency has identified, recognizing Kurt's point that this is not the agency's proposal, but the response to the request from the task force, if there's a 15 or so million figure that represents a shift of money that's going towards conservation programs that are benefiting the general public, shifting those off of license fees onto a new source, does that shift free up enough to allow the license fees, the 15 or so million that would be no longer paying for those programs that are shifted off, to be put into the types of things related to whether it's hatcheries or opportunities, that gets the hunting and fishing community to the place of, okay, this is a real win here. We may not need the exemption because we're seeing a future of how our fees will be used that frees up around 15 million in the near term, and then has a kind of longer term indexed approach to be sure that the burden's not always coming back to the license community on supporting the agency. And that seems like the other equity piece that's out there. So just having heard it over the many months and prior to, it seems like solving for those two, whether it's today or through a subgroup or whatever, is really important. Because otherwise, I think you're right, Rob. It's like if the conservation community and the hunting and fishing community aren't together on a solution, the big task of broadening a coalition that needs to happen beyond that is made 1,000 times more difficult because the natural constituents that could be holding hands wouldn't be.
Jim and then Jim.
Again, hold our thoughts on that. So,
you so want to get there, the proposal out on the table.
So there's the funding. Sorry, Jim. I want to move us forward. So there's the funding need. Staff is recommending that in our preliminary report here, it be in the neighborhood of $80 million, accomplished through reduction in our original request by about $6 million. We've articulated how that money would be spent programmatically. And then we get to the alternatives. And it's actually a bit more complicated than just whether there's an exemption or not. So let me run through the decision points that need to be made about the funding alternatives. And Beth and Christine are here, and they're gonna walk us through the details. But here are the decision points. If there's a surcharge, the first decision point is it per filer or per household? Okay, difference there. The second decision on a surcharge is exemption for license fee holders or no exemption. We are making the assumption that there will be an exemption for low income because without that, it doesn't pass constitutional muster. We don't think that a low-income exemption is on the table. So second point, exemption or no exemption for license holders. The third decision point on the surcharge is flat rate or percent. For the beverage container, the decision is flat rate or percent. And then the third tier of decision-making got two parts. Are you forwarding to the legislature one or more scenarios?
Jim, could you say that again? I'm sorry.
Are you forwarding to the legislature one funding scenario or both? And once you make that decision, are you forwarding one option for each or multiple options for each? Number of decision points.
Okay,
so we have.
Jim, do you have a clarification question?
I have a question related to Jim's first remark about the $80 million.
Okay.
Okay. In all of our conversations amongst the sporting groups that I've been working with, we do not think that this equity question gets solved by reducing the amount. One of the things, so we agree with the $80 million. We agreed with full implementation of the conservation strategy, and we ought to work from that perspective about what's most equitable in terms of, for example, if you give the exemption to sportsmen, then the surcharge increases, or if you don't give the exemption to sportsmen, the surcharge decreases. But we do not want the solution to this sportsman's equity issue to be resolved in not fully implementing the plan. So I just wanted to make that clear. That was universal from all the groups I talked about. We ought to decide that the full implementation of the plan is the $79.7 million per biennium, and that ought to be a core principle we decide right off the bat. Then we ought to wrestle with how we raise that amount of money, what's equitable and fair.
So, Mr. Chair, Beth and Christine are here to walk us through the calculations on the funding alternatives, if you're ready for that.
Yep.
So does everyone have the?
Why don't we just pass
sheet?
Them around just to make sure everybody's got the latest? It should say September 14th
right.
edition, just to make sure everybody's got the right one.
So I have a couple of just preliminary comments, and then if you have specific questions about how the calculations were made, Christine is here for that. So my things I wanted to point out are that, first of all, this page is basically a simpler version of what you've seen in the past. We've just tried to break it down so it's more understandable. And I think from some of the comments I've heard today, we may have lost some in the translation there. You might need more information than what's on this page. But basically, it's information that's been refined as the revenue target has changed. So now we're the target that this reflects is $80 million per full biennium, which leads me to the second point, which is that the 2017-2019 figures reflect an 18-month biennium. A new revenue source like what you're talking about would kick in on January 1 of 2018. So these numbers reflect that. Some of the previous versions did not.
So that's a really important point.
Those are the main changes,
about
I think.
Because of the way that implemented this, it won't go into effect until a certain time period, so it doesn't bring in as much money, but the next biennium would be the full implementation.
Right, right.
Okay.
And then on the one other change is that on the tax surcharge, this version reflects the surcharge being on an individual return per individual. So for a joint return, there would be two surcharges. For an individual, for a single filer, it would be just one charge.
Okay. So, did you want to go through any of this?
Well, I guess if the group, I'm not sure. I think it's pretty self-explanatory with those comments. But if you have questions about how the different figures were calculated, Christine's
here. Christine here to answer those questions. Yes, Meryl.
I was just wondering if you could give us like a couple of examples, look at some income brackets, because I'm not particularly great at math. Like what would somebody who's making $50,000, $100,000, $150,000 be paying in these different scenarios?
For the percentage, so that would be a situation
for the
where we're looking
at
the percentage.
Complex.
Oh, good to hear that. It's not just me.
I can process that request, though. You know, what you have to do is kind of go through the different federal and state and run the simulation like you would for having that amount of AGI. So you were interested in 50, 100, and...
Yeah, any three, just sort of a broad span so I have an idea of really when you're at the, you know... When you're at your accountant or H&R Block or whatever, you know, how much more are you going to be paying for this?
Sure, and it would you know increase the tax bill by the 1%. So just think of what the tax bill is, and it would increase it.
Okay.
But there's a lot of possible kind of scenarios.
Yeah.
It's a complicated because you have deductions and then you have standard. or itemized deductions and a lot of different variables. But I could work through the examples with a generic family if you'd like.
Sure. I just think that somebody's going to wind up asking, how does it impact me? Like, I'm the average family and person in Oregon. You know, how much more will I have to pay if it's a percentage? That's what I'm thinking about, yeah. Thank you.
Okay. Paul, Ketta, Rob, and then Kenji.
The table on funding options dated 9/14, does that replace this table 4 in the draft report?
Yes.
Okay, thank you.
This is the latest information based upon. Ketta?
Given that this is actually 1% on your tax bill, what I think is more helpful is to know, because what you said is that our taxes are going to be really complex. And so what are the outcomes on a given tax bill? So that generation. So if your taxes are $5,000 a year, $10,000, so on, is more reflective, right, than as an annual salary, because each of us has different levels of deductions.
So I was able to get a hold of one of the simulations I ran with a family of four, and if they had $50,000 in adjusted gross income, the total tax that they would owe in Oregon is $2,755, so $2,755, and then so a 1% surtax makes $28 more for them. A family of four with a $100,000 income would end up paying $68 more due to the 1% surcharge, and so it's proportional. If it's a 2% surcharge, just double that number.
Just one quick clarification is that family of four, are you assuming then two people paying 68 each or 68, like for $100,000?
Joint.
Because it's per, if they're filing jointly, but they're each individually are being charged, right?
Yeah. The amount of income that's on that return is 100,000 total, so they make it together somehow. Somebody makes.
Okay, so it would be 68 total, not 68 each individual.
Yeah, for that return.
Percentage part.
Okay, Kenji.
So, Chair Mark, is it okay if I make a general comment between flat surcharges and percentages, and which one is better? Okay. One of the things that we have to be very careful about is one of the things that we are charged with is creating a sustainable funding stream. A flat surcharge is not going to index for inflation, so if we need to go back, we have to go back to the legislature. With a percentage, it's going to index very well. We have this issue, especially with the gas tax, because it was set at a flat rate. And going back and asking for more is always difficult. It's a heavy lift, as Representative Helm and the Senator knows. So in any calculus that we make, take that into consideration, that a percentage is likely going to be sustainable, whereas a flat one will stay flat. So, yep.
Okay, so I'm going to modify Jim's proposal a little bit, so just to see if we can get us moving here. So can we pull your cards out? Got yellow, green, and red. So can we agree as a task force that we want to move both proposals through, not the details of the proposals, but both proposals through, the income tax surcharge and the beverage container surcharge, as options for an interim proposal to the legislature? Not the details yet, but just the two concepts. Do we have agreement on that we want to move at least those forward, or do we want to just choose one or the other? So let's first vote on, do we want to move the two proposals through that the task force has originally agreed on? So, okay, so we're all pretty much all green on that. So, okay, we got a yes on that. So now we got the two proposals.
You need to ask on the phone.
Oh, on the phone, yes, sir. Do we have a green on, or yellow or red?
Green,
okay. So we're unanimous that we're going to move both proposals through as interim to the legislature to get direction on. So, okay, so now let's yes, Brett.
Quick clarification, I hope it's quick. So if we sit down with the interim committees and somebody says to whoever's presenting, so I see these other ideas that were in the report but taken off the table that are outside of the two that are moving forward, if that particular legislator says, well, I really like something like the retail on outdoor equipment idea,
yep,
what does the task force say back?
We will take legislative direction. You know, we're a committee of the legislature.
You know, we started this process looking at more than 100 alternatives. Then we ran through some evaluation criteria. These two options that are in front of you, dear legislators, are the ones that best meet the tests.
Yeah, best meet the criteria. But if a committee, in my opinion, if the committee says we're not going to look at any of them, we want you to look at this, then we're going to probably go back to the table. I doubt if they'll do that. I seriously doubt it, but I hope they won't.
Yeah, no, I think there is a distinction between if a member of the legislative body wants to go in a certain direction, that's their call, but this task force needs to be clear on what it's
these are our recommendations.
Saying is in and what's saying is out.
Yep. We're going to give them our opinion based upon our work, based upon the criteria that we were given by the legislature. This is, at least we would move two proposals forward.
You're on a roll, Mark. Keep going.
Okay, so now let's take the hard one first. So the income tax surcharge, we've got option 1, 2, 3, and 4. We know that Jim's clearly stated the low-income tax filer stays on with everything. It won't pass muster if we don't do that. Yep, Representative Helm, comment?
I think this is the right time, Mr. Chair, to mention this. Kurt and I were just chatting, had a sidebar on this idea of balancing the equity between the hunting and fishing community and the conservation community. One way to perhaps split the baby on this is to, if there is an exemption for hunting and fishing licenses, to put a sunset on that. So do it for a few years, see how the equilibrium of the funding susses out, and then people would have a chance to revisit it in, 6 years or something like that. So,
without jeopardizing support for the full package right now,
as an effort to make.
Okay, so that would be option five.
Well, sort of a modification of option four, I guess.
Okay. So let's talk about that. So do we want to add that to option four, that it would have a sunset clause put into there?
I had one question first. The notion of a tax credit was mentioned a couple, by some feedback, and I'm not clear on what that means, if we went that route versus the other way. So do we want to talk about what that means to have a tax credit?
We can talk about
that. Because it's a similar modification as what you're raising here. It's a sunset clause or a tax credit or something else.
We have talked about that before, I think at a previous meeting, and we decided not to go there. But if so,
I don't.
Christina, do you have a comment on that? And then we'll get
to
Chair Phil.
How a credit might or might not work?
Yeah, that's exactly what I'm looking for, yeah.
You could, modify it on the tax form. So I guess it would be maybe some sort of worksheet that would say, okay, if you do have a hunting and angling license, maybe some, I don't know if there's a control where someone can provide maybe the number of their license, or if there's a serial number on that at this point or not, or what's happening in the system, then, take no further action and use the traditional tax tables. If you do not have a hunting or angling license, an annual hunting or angling license, then go to step B, and then you would multiply your tax by 1.01 and remit that number. So it would be, maybe I can envision like a worksheet. I wonder, to go through the step of multiplying your tax by 1.01 and then also claiming having a separate line for the credit, they would cancel each other out on the same tax form. I guess it's an option. I don't want to speak out of turn with DOR about what might be easy to administer. But
your point is it's more difficult.
Well, there's going to be a slight administrative cost, probably, to changing tax forms even, and some of the, there's probably programming in the systems in response to all of this, and printing those instructions for people. So DOR would weigh in on specifically what those are, what the easiest way to do that is.
Do you have a sense, Christine, for how much more difficult or costly it becomes if the credit is there versus just the exemption, or is it adding something that is already kind of going to be in process that it costs what it costs?
I just don't know. I would really have to bring DOR in for that answer.
Okay, Jim?
Well, I just wanted, since we're about to vote on this, I just want to make a plea on the behalf of the sportsmen, both from a perspective of the equity argument and perspective of the fact that we're rapidly pricing ourselves right out of the market and exacerbating a problem, that what we favor, our discussion group favors, with one exception, is the full exemption. If that is unacceptable to the group, what we favor next is no exemption, but a recommendation to the legislature that they reduce hunting and fishing fees, the amount that the exempt is essentially the equivalent of the exemption. The third alternative is give us the exemption, but put a sunset on it. So those would be the order in which we would prefer. We think it's very important to have some kind of a recognition here. Whatever action we take sends a message of respect to the sportsmen that have been funding this agency all these years. And whatever action we take will have the practical effect of keeping more people in the base, hunting and fishing, which is a very important problem in terms of the longevity of the solution. If we push more people out of this base, we're going to be back at the drawing board in 2 to 5 years, increasing the general public assessment. and we don't want to do that either. So I'm making a plea for showing respect and also having the practical effect of keeping more people hunting and fishing here. And those are the orders, those the order of preference that our group would appreciate the most.
Okay. Jim, Rob, and then Kenji. Oh, I'm sorry, Chair Friendly.
Been waiting.
I'm sorry, I missed you. You've been, had yours up for a long time. Sorry.
I'd like to set the table a little bit here. 35% of the department's budget comes from license fees. 35% comes from federal funds. 30% comes from lottery contracts. And within that category of 30%, 8% is general fund. Okay? So you can get that in your minds. I'm a sportsman, but with all due respect, they're not paying the majority of the freight. Okay? Let's talk about, and I want to lay this out on the table before we get into the argument on exemptions. What does a license fee mean? A resident fishing license is $38. Some people are opposed to hunting, but they will fish. They might not even kill anything because they do catch and release. A hunting license is $32. A sports pack is $180. Now, I buy a sports pack. Next year, I will get a combo senior for $41.50. I'm eligible for it. I will continue to buy a sports pack because I put the money into the kitty. A combination hunting and fishing is $65. A shell fishing license is $9. A senior angling license is $25. A pioneer combo is $6. So when you say you're going to have an exemption for sports licenses, license holders, what are we saying? The details are stunning, and they require a lot of discussion. It's not just an exemption for sportsmen and women. You have to parse this, make a decision on equity. There's one further thing that goes with a license. A license is an authority to take publicly owned fish and wildlife. Then you reduce it to personal consumption for yourself or your family. It's not just to do the activity. So when you talk about equity, if I take an elk home, if you price elk from New Zealand, imported, there is quite a personal benefit that also hits the equity issue. I am bringing home a tag full of salmon and steelhead, factory fish, produced at the cost of the state of Oregon. I have a license. I paid to be authorized to take it. I'm also supplementing my family's personal income with the benefit of that food source. So anyway, I wanted to do that, Mark. Because what we've been throwing out there is, well, if they have a hunting and fishing license, but it's either hunting or fishing license, or pioneer license, or senior license. So, just saying.
Yeah, good point. Thank you. Okay, Rob? And then.
Well, I had a question for Jim, and I'm just trying to clarify my own thinking about this, and my question is very much along the lines of Mike's, but what does the sports community think represents equity? And would giving an exemption leave them with a net cost that they think is an equitable cost? And how is that number determined in their evaluation? There's no objective measurement here of
right. What
represents an equitable payment, but what's the range in which they think it's equitable to pay for a license?
I think most people, and I just speak for our small discussion group, but I think most people believe an equitable solution would be to offset the increase which would come from the surcharge in some manner so that they're essentially held harmless with the fees that they're currently paying. Now, many people believe that this last fee increase was excessive, and then the fee increase is going to kick in above and beyond that excessive. But we also understood that the alternative is a major slashing of the department, and we didn't want that. So we settled for supporting the fee increase and the establishment of this committee so that we could try to figure out a longer-term solution. So what I believe as an interim that most sportsmen believe is if you have an annual hunting and fishing license, you would get the full offset of the 25 or 30 or whatever it is per filer. And then if you had a license fee that was proportionately smaller than an annual hunting and fishing license, you would get a proportionately smaller reduction to basically get at what Mike's saying. Now, I just want to point out that if you come home with your elk, as Mike pointed out, you also paid a very substantial elk fee on top of that. And I'm not talking about your hatchery and harvest tag or your salmon steelhead tag or any of those additional tags. I'm just talking about a proportionality of fee structure that relates to your annual resident hunting and fishing license.
But I guess my question is, what is it that, if there's anything, that supports the idea that the net cost after the exemption represents a fair cost?
Well, there is no unanimity amongst our entire community. But most of the people I've talked to feel like a deal was cut in the last legislature and the structure is the structure. We're not asking for a whole-scale rollback of that. We're asking for don't add $50 per household on top of that structure that was already cut in the last legislature, which now there's plenty of people in the community feel like that was excessive. It was a historic increase. It was the highest increase ever taken from a proportional standpoint. But we're willing to live with that. We would like to avoid this increases coming, and we would like to have some kind of an offset if we're going to get a tax surcharge on top of it.
Okay, so let me try this. Roger, do you have something you want to?
I was wondering if it's beneficial to kind of walk through what the phases are in the fee increase and put some numbers out there so that people have that understanding. That was included in one of the white papers that we presented early on, and I didn't have it in front of me at the time, but the way the fee increase is structured, the fees went up, all fees went up by a slightly different percentage and a slightly different rate. In 2016, they're scheduled to go up again in 2018 and again in 2020. So it's phased in over three biennium as opposed to what we've done historically, which was a single increase that covered a six-year period. So we broke it up somewhat on that front. So I can just give you a couple of examples of licenses. For an annual resident hunter, the fee in 2015 was $29.50 per year. That went to $32 effective January 1 of 2016. In 2018, it will go to $33.50 and then $34.50 in 2020 in that third increment. For a resident angling license, it was $33 in 2015, went to $38 this year, will go to $41 in 2018 and $44 in 2020. So when we talk about the third phase of the increase, it's that final increment of a dollar on a hunting license and $3 on a fishing license. Now, the tags and fees and other costs associated there, you know, vary the change of the impact depending on what people do. But those are the numbers that we're talking about in terms of what that increase is.
Okay, so let me, Merrill?
Yeah, and thanks. Because I can appreciate, Jim, you know, where you're coming from and where folks that you're talking to, but I'm also in the camp of not putting forward the exemption, and I know, and here's why, and I've written it down. But first, it really, it's discouraging to hear you say that you think that because these fees will increase and we wouldn't get the exemptions, that we would lose another generation of hunters and fishers, when it's all part of the strategy and it's really embedded in why we're funding this in the first place. So I look at that as a kind of a conflict. And, you know, from my perspective, I believe in, if I believe in something and I spend my discretionary time and money participating in, and I use the example of the art museum or the Japanese garden, I'm happy also, I mean, to a certain degree, to pay for the arts tax, because it benefits a broader range of things that I believe in and I think that are important to society. So to me, it's really hard for me to move past that, you know, my position, and think that these fees are so monumental for folks that they would feel so, you know, feel so strongly that they would just get out of hunting and fishing altogether and not pass that important value onto their children, because they just can't see the value of increasing and paying for these fees.
Okay, Claire?
That,
can you pull the mic around to your, pull the mic around now to make sure everybody can hear you okay?
Yeah. I'm an angler, and I think a case could be made that people who pay right now for their annual licenses, maybe this is true of hunters too, I hang around with a lot of hunters, by the way, who would support an exemption. But I think it's going to be dependent on the department showing with new funding, if we're going to have the exemption, that new hunting and angling opportunities are going to be created, you know, and they're going to be education programs to bring new people into the sport. And through improvements in the habitats and the conditions of the fish and game species out there, I think that is an important element that we don't want to lose sight of either.
So. Okay, so here's, I'm going to try this, see if it works. And if it doesn't, we'll just do something else. But clearly there's very good opinions on both sides, very strong arguments on both sides. And it's my belief that this is probably not our last meeting. It's my belief that the legislature is going to give us.
The hostages will not be released.
Yeah, yeah.
Meetings will be
I used to think this was our last meeting, but I almost guarantee you it's probably not. So,
oh,
so what we could do is we could bring forth the four options to both the House and the Senate committees and say, you know, these are the four options that we're discussing in the interim. There's strong points to both of them. They meet the criteria. There's people that have differences of opinion on all four of these options, and we would like some legislative direction on, if you want to give us that legislature, of which options you'd like us to further vet. And then we essentially give it to them, and then they say, well, we like option four. We want you to go back and vet that some more, or we'd like you to give that option two some more discussion. And so then we get that direction from them, and then we go back as a task force and say, okay, we serve at your pleasure, legislature. You've given us that direction, and we will go back now, and we will vet that further based upon the direction that you give us. Representative Helm.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I appreciate the sentiments behind that approach. What I have a real fear of, and given the hard work that the committee has done, the task force has done, is that be careful what you ask for, because the answer might not work. It's very, very likely that you would get a black, we don't like any of them. And that is the easiest thing for folks to say right off the bat. And it doesn't give you a chance to build your case, which you're going to need, I think.
You're going to need time to work, and you've already been doing this, but when this report hits the legislature, you're going to need to have pre-washed folks and gotten them the information, my colleagues the information, to really understand some of these complex dilemmas. You know, Mike and I were just laughing out loud at what a paradox it is to try to make these communities cohabitate and all of the different principles and values that are embedded in them. It's so difficult because of human nature. And so I'd really caution what you ask for and give yourselves a chance to make your case to the legislature and individual legislators before you ask for direction.
About a preferred option. Okay. Task force, you want to take that advice, or do you want Brett?
Well, so, yeah, Jim, I want to ask, Mark, I want to ask the question. So I guess what I raised earlier, I thought there were two equity issues that seemed to be in play. I think there's probably more, at least one more, and that kind of relates to how the agency is engaged in programs or engaging publics who aren't as engaged or involved in the core of what the state's delivering on fish, wildlife, education, recreation. That's kind of, that gets at the diverse, underserved communities, or communities beyond hunters and fishers who fully care about fish, wildlife, habitat. I don't even think that equity conversation about reaching a broader public happens, though, if the conservation communities and the hunting and fishing communities can't kind of sort something out here. And I think you all are at a pretty critical juncture of walking away, at least those communities, either coming together or pulling apart, depending on what the decision is here. And so when you all vote, I think just for sake of clarity and the feedback, it would be, I'm assuming that if the decision on the exemption is in place, or the question on whether to keep that in place assumes that the last phase of the Senate Bill 247 fee increase is also staved off, and that the $15 million in shifts also happens. And I think that's the, I don't know if that's the expectation. Yeah. I wanted to question that. And
part of, yeah, the $80
million. Yeah. It is part of in there, right? Yeah. It's what's in there now. And right, those are those kind of staving off the shift, or staving off the last fee increase, and then the 15 and shift, I think, are ways to try to address the equity issues. But with the exemption, my assumption is those things stay in place. I just wanted the task force to be clear on that. Okay.
Yeah. Jim?
And if you guys are, if you guys are going to have the vote, I would, not wanting to speak for Senator Witz or Representative Helm, but I would just suggest don't have or ask or expect the legislature to resolve a question around equity that I think is fundamentally a conversation between the communities at this table, because I don't think they're going to want to solve it any more than anybody else. And it's really, if you can't work it out right now, right here, think about is this the final time, or do you get together in a subgroup and try to sort something out that you can all stand beyond or behind? Because I think if you come apart, it's that fundamental division of the natural constituency that is going to be needed to actually do something here.
Okay. Well, it was a good try.
Let's
go.
So a proposal.
Yeah.
So, you know, perhaps stepping outside of my box a little bit. So I do think there's a couple goals at play here. The equity goal, yes. And just as big a goal is avoiding the us versus them situation that we could easily find ourselves in. So I do recommend you put forward a recommendation on either a flat surcharge or a percent. So whichever route you go there, I think the message to the legislature at this point in time is we're very concerned about the equity issues. We recognize we've funded a large part of this program on the backs of hunters and fishers, and the legislation acknowledges that. And so we're looking at how to recognize that, and we're looking at some options that we have not had an opportunity to flush out yet to see how they work. One would be a sunset, another would be a credit, a third would be a fee reduction, and a fourth is an exemption. And we would like some more time to investigate how they work and what benefits would come out of them. So what we're forwarding is the intent to fiscally recognize the contribution of the industry, but we haven't arrived on the exact mechanism.
It's fine with me.
What was that?
I said that's fine with me.
Thoughts on that, Rob?
That's fine with me too, but I think it still might be useful to have a straw poll today so that we see where the current thinking is subject to that further investigation.
Okay, so let's do a straw poll on two things. First straw poll would be for voting members would be the surcharge or the flat surcharge or the percentage. So we got two options there, the flat or the percentage. So let's have cards. Do you have a comment on that?
I do have a comment. Okay. Actually, all of our discussion groups so far has really favored the flat foot surcharge, mm-hmm. and I've reflected that to you. But I'm listening to what Kenji says. And what Kenji says is we don't want to have to go back and redo this, uh-huh. or create the political difficulty. Let's create a percentage that will just grow over time. So I'm shifting my vote to agree with that. That just makes more sense to me.
Okay, is anybody
and
else?
I'm also listening to what Merrill said, which is there should be some sense of progressivity here, and the percentage does that as well.
Okay, anybody else want to lobby before we vote for something? Okay, so let's show our cards for the flat surcharge. Everybody, we're doing flat surcharge or percentage. So the flat surcharge is the first one. So we got red all the way around. So so clearly the percentage is what we want to go with. Is right. that correct? Okay. So we've got and on the phone?
Red.
Okay, great. Okay, so we've got option 3 and 4. Now this is the straw poll that we're talking about. So now we're going to do a straw poll on option 3 and option 4. Representative Helm had proposed that option 4 also contain a sunset clause. Are we in agreement with to add that into that option or not before we vote on that?
Can you do that maybe as a third?
I'm sorry?
I propose that we do that as a third.
Oh, option 5?
Option
okay.
5, just at least for the straw poll.
Okay. So there's an option 5, which would be exactly option 4 plus the sunset clause. So... Jim?
Could that sunset clause be sunset clause or credit or fee reduction?
Oh,
give us an opportunity to investigate which of those mechanisms would be practical.
So I see, was your ideas, representatives, are you okay with that?
I think all options where you drill down a little bit to try to make the various groups happy is probably worthwhile.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So that would be option 5 with those additional ones. Okay, so option 3, and remember, this is just a straw poll now, just to kind of see where the group is on this. Option 3, have a vote on that? So, okay, so we've got option 3 is a percentage tax income surcharge of 0.57% on individual tax return with an exemption for low-income filers.
Are we only supposed to vote for one?
Well, it might turn out. Yeah, that's a good point. That's a really good point. Yeah, we want to try to do green, yellow, red if we can. I mean, this is my highest priority. This would be my second, and this would be my third.
So
let's do that. If it's your highest priority, it would be a green, and if it's a second priority, it would be yellow, and a third priority would be red. Is everybody okay with that? Okay, so let's do option 3. Let's see who's going to take the polling here. Okay, so we've got Kenji, you're not going to vote?
I'm still thinking through this.
Okay, so option 3, we've got, who's writing this down? We got.
I see Three greens. That's the important thing.
Three green and yellow. One, two.
Four reds. Four reds.
Three yellow, I see, and one, two, three, four reds. Red.
And Scott on
where do you see three yellow? Where's the other three?
Why don't, I'm sorry, I'm half colorblind here. They've got one yellow. I'm sorry.
Two yellow.
Two yellow.
Three greens, three reds, and two yellow.
Now there's three yellows.
Oh, wait a minute. Now there's
three.
Yeah, but I'm
so it's three, three, and three.
It's going to turn out. Okay, so are you polling this, Jim?
Four reds.
Who's polling this? Let's do the greens again. If you're green, everybody else drop your card. Okay, so we got the greens, hold yours up.
How about on the phone?
And Scott on the phone?
Yeah.
Yep, and Scott on the phone. So, Scott, what are you voting on option three?
I'm voting green on three.
Okay, so we have three greens on option three. Okay, yellows, raise your cards, please.
Three yellows.
We've got three yellows.
Three
yellows on
option three still.
The only ones.
Did you vote yellow?
No, I didn't. I
voted. Okay, so we have, okay, yellows again. We got it?
Three.
Okay. And reds on option three. We got one, two, three, four reds on option three. Okay, now let's go to option four, as stated. Option four, let's do the greens first. No greens. Scott, what are you voting on option four so we get that recorded?
Yellow.
Okay, so we have next is yellow. We got one, two, three, four, five yellow, and reds on option three. One.
No, four. Option four, right?
I'm sorry. Excuse me. One, two, three, four, five reds on option four. Is that correct? We got everybody down? Okay. And then option five, which is the sunset clause, the text. So let's go greens first. Is that a green? No. One, two, three, four, five, six greens. Yellows next. One, two, three, four yellows. Scott, what's your vote on option four, or option five, excuse me?
I think I might have misunderstood, but I was going between two, three, and four, between my red, yellow.
Option five is option four with the addition of the sunset clause, the discussion about the sunset clause, the tax credit, those things. Yeah, that's true. We did say that. Yeah, I did say that. So, yeah. So we're going to get messed up here a little bit, but let's continue on.
The net result.
Well, we aren't done yet.
Okay.
We didn't do the reds yet on option five, did we? So any reds on option five? Okay, seeing zero. Okay, so what do you show, Jim?
So I'm showing that there's interest in moving forward with an option five. This the percentage of taxable income with investigating some options to provide a clear benefit to the fishing and hunting industry. Those options are sunset credit or fee reduction.
Right. And then the second choice was option four. Was that what came out second?
Well, in terms of
the greens.
Greens would be option three.
Okay, option three is number two, and option five is number one. Okay, so now let's move to the beverage container surcharge. Oh, now let's make sure everybody's okay. You can live with what the task force has put out. Okay.
So yeah. I think there's really two parts to this, and I want to make sure that I articulate it because we'll be grilled, I'm sure. What we're trying to do with option five is a clear fiscal benefit to license holders, and we're going to examine some alternatives to get us there. We need some, additional work on it. Okay.
But I think it's fair to say that given option four came in last, that's not the pathway that the dilemma is how to find a fiscal benefit that's not a permanent exemption. We're not supporting a permanent exemption because that's the way the voting came down. So we're looking for a nuance that isn't a permanent exemption, but it's showing some deference to that community through either negating the future fee increases.
Correct.
Or a sunset. Or a tax credit.
Interpretation as well.
But I think that's kind of important, so we're not...
Some form of exemption. We're not saying what it is.
Not a clear...
Not a permanent exemption flat out. Yep.
That clarifies it. Good job.
And that we're exploring some of the other questions as well.
Correct.
Yeah.
Okay. So now let's move to the beverage container surcharge. So anybody want to lobby option one or option two before we vote? Who? Yes, Kenji?
Oh, wow. Kenji wants a percentage instead of a flat fee
yeah,
for
I think
all
he's
the same
say
reasons.
The same
exactly. Yep, that's it.
Thank you, Carrie.
You're welcome.
So, anybody want to lobby option one or option two before we vote?
From beverage, right? Okay.
Okay. Yeah. Seeing none, let's go ahead and we'll have to go to the legislature with a proposal for that, which I hear the group saying we want to weigh in on one or the other. So which one would you choose? Let's go green is option one, and yellow would be option two. So in terms of priority for you personally, because we said we're going to have both options.
Wait,
why don't we do green and red since you're colorblind?
Okay, green and red, yeah, since I'm colorblind. So.
But make it red and green, because
okay, no, red and green
feel better with all green, right?
Right. Okay, good.
Tell us again which one represents what.
Okay, option one would be green, option two would be red. And so,
Mark?
Yes, sir.
Hi, Mr. James. Sorry I joined you so late. Can you give me a quick refresh on which option?
Okay.
Yes.
Option one is a 2.5 cent on beverage containers subject to the bottle bill. Option two is a 2.02% on beverage containers subject to the bottle bill. So one is a percent. The first one is a direct dollar amount, 2.5 cents, and then the second option is a percentage.
Okay, roger that.
So the percentage, if I'm reading it right, the percentage is it essentially carries on forever. It's a percentage, and the actual dollar amount is a one-time dollar amount, and it stays that way. So, okay, so let's go with option one. Who would like to see option one for a straw poll to move forward?
Option one is green, right?
And option one is green.
And option two is red, so
that's
we do
correct.
One vote?
Yep.
We could,
option
we
one?
Could vote yes, like the same color on the same.
We could vote for both? Is that what you're asking?
Yeah, can I do green for both?
No. No, we need to get a direction from the task force on which you prefer.
Chair Mark?
On the other hand.
So for clarification, if you like option one,
you
raise
green.
The green card.
Correct.
If you like option two, raise your red card.
Correct.
How's that? Okay.
So option one.
Nope, we're doing both at the same time.
Oh, okay. That even makes it quicker.
Yep.
Okay. So hold your cards back up so Jim can tell.
I got it.
You got it?
Clear majority.
So what's the tally?
So option two.
Option two would be our number one choice, and then option one would be our second choice.
And phone.
So, and on the phone, Scott?
Red.
Red for which one? Okay, option your option two then. Okay, got it. Clearly.
Vote between the surcharge and the beverage container tax.
Oh, we already we're passing.
We
did.
Yeah,
we
did. Forward both of them.
Yeah,
we
agreed to move both of them forward.
And Mike, I understand. I'm not disagreeing with that at all. But do we have a preference that we want to express?
Okay. Oh, in terms of which ones is the higher priority?
Yeah. Which
oh, that's a
priority.
Good point.
Good job. Yeah, that's a good one.
Let's do the same.
So way. We agreed we want to move them both forward. So. Let's take a straw poll and see which one, in your opinion, is the highest priority for the task force. So the income tax surcharge would be green, and the beverage container surcharge would be red. So everybody hold up their cards.
That even.
Oh, we're split right down the – and on the phone?
Red.
Phone split too.
I just want to point one thing out, and that is if we do the beverage surcharge, there's no way of letting low-income people off the hook, which seemed to be really important to the group. Now it appears that we don't
We don't favor that. I'm a little confused. So I thought that was something that was very important.
Now we're going to lobby here.
Well,
we've already voted.
I'm confused.
It's all clear as mud.
Like.
So do you want to have a discussion again and then and vote again? Or let's have it. It sounds like we have a discussion. So Rob and then Kenji.
Well, it's a voluntary tax. They get to take themselves off the hook.
Why not?
By not purchasing items subject to the excise tax.
Okay. I don't think people are going to do that. I think what's going to happen is it's going to be an impact on low-income people, that a disproportionate impact on them.
Benji?
So do we necessarily have to put forward one that's more preferable, or can we just say?
If the legislature asks us. Oh, you want to do a yellow?
Yeah.
So, I want to be careful about injecting. I think at this point in time, it's perfectly acceptable to go to the legislature and say we have two proposals on the table. We're relatively evenly split about which one we favor.
Well, is that what it turned out?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. So we're kind of, we've got a split between which one's the highest priority. So if that's clear, then.
I just would want to say, though, that Rob is right, that would make it voluntary, but then you're really penalizing an industry sector, making them a bellwether for this. And you have a lot of the Oregonians who don't buy any beverage containers. They don't drink, they don't use plastic beverage containers. They might care the most about conservation of all Oregonians, and you just took them right out of the funding mechanism. So just a couple of thoughts for the other side of the equation, because to say it would be voluntary, they just don't buy a bottle, well then why are we making the bottle industry?
But clearly the task force is split, so we're...
Well, I would just say we also add in then those people that are visiting the state that are going to be buying beverage.
So if the legislative committee asks me where does the task force stand on these two proposals, I'm going to say we're split.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. We have opinions, strong opinions both ways on this, so...
They both have merits and detractions.
Okay, we are, whoops.
Just one more. Just a comment from our focus group was that they really encouraged us to look at partnering with the beverage folks and seeing how this can be a win-win for everybody.
Yep.
And so just keeping in mind that this may actually be a positive on both sides, too.
Okay. That's all how it's worth. Chair Finley?
We sort of left my comments in the air about license fee. There's no benchmark. Jim made a good point that it would be a benchmark. Currently, I said the resident fishing license is 38, and the resident hunting license is 32. That's up to $70. The department offers a combo license for 65. For hunting and fishing. So if you want to, as a task force, adopt a benchmark to work from, then you would identify what Jim said, hunting and fishing, parens combo, which equals $65. But right now, I think the way you left your discussion is, it's just still not benchmarked. It's just a kind of formal way to close the loop.
I think we're going to explore all that, right?
Yeah, that's. I think that was based upon what I heard you say. I think with option four or option five, excuse me, we're going to have that discussion.
Okay.
So let's just to make sure, because we just made a bunch of decisions. So Jim, if you could summarize to make sure we're all on the same page here.
We were unanimous on moving both proposals forward at this point in time with legislative subcommittees.
Mm-hmm.
If we're asked whether there's a priority between the two, we're evenly split at this point.
Correct.
Mm-hmm. In terms of the income tax surcharge, we favor a percentage surcharge. And that percentage surcharge would be looking at a way to financially acknowledge the contribution of the fishing and hunting community. And we're looking at, we're exploring things like credit, sunset exemption, fee reduction, as means to get there, and we'll come back to you and tell you what works best. On the beverage surcharge, strongly favor option two.
Yep.
And I think Kenna made a good point. I would recommend that our recommendation on option surcharge, on the beverage surcharge, is that that would include our a recommendation to explore partnering with the industry so that it's a win-win.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Okay. Good job. We're there. So now we got to get in the next 20 minutes. We got to do some other major stuff. The key messages.
Well.
Oh, you're not done yet?
You got more? Yeah, and maybe we can fly through this quickly. But you're done on the money part.
Oh.
But there were several other charges we had, and one was to look at program adjustments. And so in your report on page 23 and 24, we've laid out a number of program adjustments. Now, the legislation didn't say that you had to go in and find how to reduce. Doesn't say that. And the consequence of this whole program is to actually expand existing programs. And so we've tried to lay that out here. The net result of the response to that legislative direction is we're proposing some significant programmatic expansions. We've laid them out. And hopefully we've captured correctly what we've heard from you. If not, please let us know. So there's nine key programmatic adjustments. And I'll just keep going. The third part of the legislative direction was leveraging partnerships. We've laid out what we heard from you, a number of options to do just that. And so those are on pages 25 and 26. So actually, when we translate all the work you did, there's a lot of stuff here that we propose to forward. And then lastly, are some additional recommendations that came out of this process that were not directly responsive to the legislative direction. One you previously approved, which was to support the national legislation. So we think we should forward that as part of what goes to the legislature. Two is one of your objectives was that we had clearly defined mechanisms to monitor and to assess how this additional funding is being spent. Does it indeed meet your objectives? So that never showed up in any of our recommendations per se. So we've added on page 27 some proposed monitoring and measuring outcomes. And what it boils down to is the department already has to report to the legislature on a regular basis on how its programs are meeting their intent. So that's one approach. You just continue that. The conservation strategy has specific monitoring and performance metrics in it. It's got monitoring stuff in it, doesn't it? So one thing we can rely upon the conservation strategy, but maybe not. And then lastly, the department has to provide reports to the legislature on its key performance measures. We would suggest that those be expanded to address how they're responding to the objectives in your recommendations.
Okay. Claire, and then Kenji.
Again, unless I've overlooked something in the conservation strategy, I could not find the level of detail that I would expect to, you know, be based on sound science for monitoring, other than for some of the strategy species, which is a smaller percentage of the state species. And so that prompted my question earlier about whether the department is, in conjunction with implementation of the strategy, going to have some other programmatic documents or guidance for really getting a pulse, taking the pulse of the state's fish and wildlife and habitats per the mission and the legislative direction that's been in state statute for many years. So, yes, there is an element of that in the conservation strategy, but I think that there are some missing pieces that I think the department should be responsible for reporting out on a fairly regular basis on.
So could I ask if you could provide some wording that we might?
Sure, sure, I can do that.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Give that to Jim.
Yeah, and I apologize for going through this too fast. Here's the bottom line recommendation, and it's in the last sentence before the bullets on page 27. Assuming approval of alternative sustainable funding, an initial required action should be the development of appropriate monitoring and reporting programs based upon specific metrics developed by the department in consultation with stakeholder groups. So recognition we don't have them in front of us, but that they need to be developed.
That would be a good beginning.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
I'm willing to help work on some language to flesh that out a little bit further, because I realize it's kind of wonky, and you know, with my scientific background, it's hard for a lot of people to understand. But I think it is crucial to achieving what the legislature expected us to do.
So could you do it right away?
Provide like today?
That? I mean, because we want to try to get it into the report that's going to the legislature next week.
Well, no, I think we're fine at the moment, but as we go forward, assuming we do, yes, we would want to integrate it.
Yeah, happy to do
that.
Well,
if you still want to get him some stuff, get it to him.
Okay.
he's trying to get this thing put together quickly.
I'll work on that today and tomorrow. Yeah.
By 3 o'clock today, right?
So quick thing on the language that's in the three bullet points that follows. It seems pretty permissive in terms of the language that's used, because you use the word could. I think rather than could, it should follow the first paragraph's language of should. So, for example, first one, similar reports on implementation of task force recommendations should be required. So that's just a language change.
So wherever it says could in one
should.
Statement, yeah, say should. Is everybody okay with that? Okay. Good input.
Okay. So one additional recommendation we haven't really talked about was indexing future license fees. Now, I don't want to muddy it with this, the three tiers that we're currently in. This would be in the future. I think Roger can speak to this very quickly.
So Jim Martin and others have highlighted the challenge that we run into when we go in and propose fee increases and we raise fees. Historically, when our pattern has been to raise fees every 6 years, and it's a fairly large increase at that point in order to cover projected costs in the out years. And the result we've seen is there's a pretty much a straight connection between that fee increase and then the following year sales. Total license sales drop off. Revenue increases because you charge more, but the participation drops off. This last time we did the fee increase, we did some survey work of hunters and anglers and license buyers and put out two proposals. One was, would you rather pay a large increase at one shot, or would you rather have more incremental increases where it's spread out over a period of years? And that proposal received the most support in that survey, and that's how we then built our package that we move forward. So that's why these fee increases go are raised incrementally over a period of 6 years. The concept of indexing has been talked about before, where you would just do more like businesses do, which is you raise fees periodically and incrementally rather than these big jumps that then have a negative consequence on your sales. Indexing or a more measured approach to fee increases would parallel what we did this last time around, and we have not seen a negative response on terms of license sales since that fee increase took effect. In fact, in almost all categories, license sales are up in 2016 over 2015 levels.
And Rob, seems like there's the one only thing that's different is that we've gone to the phase 2-year steps instead of the 6-year steps, and maybe the, so size of the increase, but it seems like that seems to have made a difference.
Yep. Compared to we obviously need to do some more teasing that out, but that is the big change. When you look at the same license type from year to year, those major categories where there wasn't any big change, those sales are up over last year. And indexing, again, is just a simple concept that had been thrown out where you tie it to consumer price index or whatever, because you recognize that as much as you want to try to hold on costs continue to go up, whether it's operating expenses or personnel costs, et cetera. So this would just be a more incremental increase in fees over time, recognizing that costs will go up. Anyway, it's just an idea that has been thrown out there, and Kurt has anything to add on it, but
I would just add there, I think there are several states that are actually doing that already. They've indexed to inflation. Simplify the discussion when we did come back for something above and beyond a consumer price index type of fee increase, it would be to deliver some specific package, which is much easier for people to put their hands around and support is an additional increase because it provides a new package as opposed to just covering general inflation. So
the proposal is that if there is a recommendation in the legislature for a fee increase in the future, that it would be indexed. So does the group wish to support that or not? Thoughts? Green cards all over the place. Okay, on the phone, got all green. Scott, are you there?
Yep. He made their getaway.
Yeah, he made the getaway. Okay.
Sorry about that.
Okay. You support that?
I do.
Okay. Thank you, sir. Okay. Now, so Beth, I think you're going to go ahead.
Last additional recommendation.
Oh, you got another one.
I'm sorry. I think we haven't actually discussed these. We haven't fully discussed these, so I want to make sure they were on the table as recommendations. So we heard in the conversation about expanding education and engagement programs that we need to be partnering with groups who may be better at it than the department, particularly if we want to, for example, reach underserved communities. We should be partnering with the folks who are better engaged with those communities. So what we've recommended is that we really, in order to move the education and outreach component forward, we need to further study how it would be implemented. So we're proposing that an initial implementation action would actually be a feasibility study of what the department does versus what it relies upon others for.
To propose a feasibility study. Everybody okay with that? Don't need to throw up a card. Yeah, sounds good.
That's the right thing to do.
Yep. Okay, now can I move on? You done?
Forever.
Okay, no. So, Beth, if you could give us some, before we move into a discussion of what are our key messages. So, I'll be sitting at the table next week presenting the proposal. So, should we have task force members in the room? What's your thinking on this, your guidance?
That's really entirely up to you. I think you have probably 10 minutes in each committee to make some time for questions and answers with the committee. So if you want somebody else or someone else wants to be here to be there, it's perfectly fine. It's up to you.
So I was thinking Jim would be at the table with me if everybody's okay with that. From the staff standpoint, and do you think it would be good to have Roger there in case there's a question about, at least in the audience?
Kurt plans to be there. We're there for backup if needed.
Okay, so if you can make it, great. I don't have my notes right here in front of me, so maybe you can. The Senate committee is next.
Senate is Wednesday at 2 p.m.
And then. Okay. So if you're there in the back of the room, very much appreciate the support. But if you can't make it, you can always just tune in. So So now, the key messages. What Jim's ready to write, or Alicia's ready to write, we're going to have 10 minutes with questions. So thoughts on key messages? Yes, Jim.
Well, if I were asked what this is all about, it would be this is really important to Oregon's livability and Oregon's future economy. The current funding model is broken, and if we don't fix it, we're going to be undermining Oregon's livability and future economy. And these solutions, while politically difficult, are going to prevent things from getting a lot more difficult down the road. And I'm not just talking about more endangered species. I'm just going to talk about a less robust environment, which is the heart of our economy. Now, Eco Northwest did a study of our livability and basically said it's not just how many tourists come and go fishing or go sightseeing. It boils down to our competitive advantage and the wages that we pay for the similar job if it was in LA or in New York. And when you look at it that way, our livability essentially boils down to about 10% to 15% of our GMP. So if you calculate 10 to 15% of our GMP, that's what we're talking about here. And I think we have to basically characterize this as we've got the beginning of a very severe problem that's going to get more severe down the road, and we can't solve it in the same old way, which is just jacking up hunting and fishing fees or expecting more federal funds. So the old traditional way of solving this problem won't work anymore. We're looking at a new funding mechanism. Please weigh the political difficulty of more taxes against preventing a very severe problem down the road for Oregon's future in terms of economy and livability. I think only business voices are going to, and those kind of messages are going to essentially turn this legislative resistance around. And I think that's the way we've got to characterize things. It's not the way we normally characterize the value of tourism, hunting, and fishing, but I think we need a different kind of a narrative here.
Okay, let's just go around if you have any comments. Okay.
I would, you know, these are huge national and international issues right now. So it is about livability and it is about economy, but, you know, it gets right down to clean water and all of those things. The conservation plan is going to just maintain the quality of life for those of us who live here. So I think it's really interesting to know what that wage differential is. I certainly feel it. My team makes less than similar teams in other states, and they are willing to work for less because they want to live here to do the work that they do.
Your message?
I think it would be important to get in a point about the process we've gone through for the last 9 months and briefly touch on the makeup of the task force and the different representatives that have brought a point of view here, and that for the most part it's been pretty agreeable in how we've talked about things. And I think it's important that there's at least a certain level of consensus that you get to share. Maybe it's part of the recommendation on the alternatives. You get that.
You know, we're calculating up. I think we've spent a minimum of 70 hours per person just in task force meetings working on this. So just in the meetings itself, not outside. So, yeah. Key message? Any?
Key message for me is that additional funding is necessary in order to for the department to perform the basic science essential for its performance of its mission and to make good decisions with respect to its mission. And it's not doing that today. It can't do that today.
Any message?
Yeah, and I would apologize for getting here late. I think I would say much the same as other people there. I would also go back, though, to our survey data that says these issues are really important to Oregonians, and I would particularly point to the fact that they put conservation at the top of their list of priorities for the Department of Fish and Wildlife, and that we all acknowledge that the department really doesn't have the resources to do that job.
Okay, thank you. Paul? Okay.
Yeah, I think underscoring that this crosses multiple dimensions of diversity and that that ties into a lot of the other comments, that this isn't a single group interest.
Yeah, I mean, I would just reiterate that, you know, this is a something that benefits everyone, and as we look at these solutions, I hope that we can all keep open mind about how we can bring everyone to the table and really set up this discussion as, you know, no matter what approach we take, this is a win for everyone. If it affects the beverage industry, that we can articulate to them how this can be a win for them as well. And as taxpayers, if we're asked to contribute some more funding, that, you know, it really, we tell this story that inspires everyone to want to be part of this, that we're all doing something great for the state.
I agree with everything, but I would also include that we established a thoughtful and comprehensive list of criteria, and that these funding scenarios are a result of strategic, creative, inclusive thinking and robust discussion.
Claire?
Yeah, I agree with everything that people have said. I'd really stress, you know, our rich fish and wildlife heritage in this state, and that the public expects, the legislature has spoken, not just in terms of passage of 2402, but, you know, legislation that was passed a number of years ago that give responsibilities to the department, and these are public resources, and we have a stewardship responsibility, and right now, because of the funding problem, the department cannot fulfill that responsibility adequately, and also the survey results and the changing landscape and demographics. We've got to step up to the plate and address those right now, and this is a great opportunity to both do good science, support good science, and acknowledge that we've got a changing population.
Okay, Mike?
What we need is a comprehensive wildlife management and stewardship plan, which includes non-game species. What we have is a conservation strategy. That's a budgeting document that was just recently approved by the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service. That is a document that is sent in to obtain federal funds. It's an excellent document, but it's incomplete in terms of what we saw in the survey, where the public asked to favored ecological relationships, watchable wildlife, all these things. The state bird is a meadowlark. When's the last time the department did a songbird study, seabird study, comprehensive beaver study? Comprehensive bat study was over 20 years ago. If you don't know the status of your wildlife, how can you manage it? And I don't mean these marks to be derogative of the department. Comprehensive strategy is good as far as it goes. It's a good first step. But I don't want anyone in this room to understand that that's what needs to be funded. It's a good first step. It's not a comprehensive fish and wildlife management strategy, including non-game species. So, you know, we shouldn't be delivering a message that's not totally comprehensive in nature for future generations.
Okay, thank you. Representative, key messages for us?
Well, I think I think you've heard a lot of great messaging. I guess what I would encourage the presenters to do is use the opportunity a little bit for education and resetting the thinking about what the premise is. I mean, when I think back to when we adopted this in 2015, you know, my colleagues didn't know very much about what was going on, except that there was a budget hole. And then some of our friends down in Ways and Means subcommittees worked out some solutions. So they do not know very much. So some of this basic information that we talked about today, like what are the big buckets of money that the budget is composed of now, and would be a great place to start. And new information like the survey that Bruce mentioned, great, because that starts to form the basis upon which they can start making decisions and informing themselves about the larger game plan that you guys have. So don't, you know, don't go straight to the, you know, here's our option. Sort of set the table and educate my colleagues the way that we've been slowly educated over the last 6 months.
So 5 minutes of education, 5 minutes of presentation is probably what I'm going to get.
8 minutes of education in 2 minutes.
Okay. Thank you. Yes, Director?
Well, I would just also add that I think it's important to note that this is not an issue that's unique to Oregon. In fact, it's a national issue. Only a couple states have actually really, over the last decade or two, figured out a solution. And we know, we heard from several of those, you all heard from several of those states, including Missouri. So I think it's important to highlight that this isn't an issue that's unique just to Oregon. It's across the country. And that you reached out and heard from those other states and that about those other state and national efforts as you tried to craft a solution here for Oregon. But not agree with the statements that have been made by others.
Okay, thank you. Senator?
The Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife should adopt a long-term comprehensive management strategy. And in Director Meltzer's response to that, he said that the department has recently invested in funding, facilitation, and dedicated staff time for senior leadership members to develop a long-term, long-range strategy plan. The effort is focused on aligning and prioritizing agency goals and objectives with a shared vision of future stability and program enhancements. What the department has already done in their strategic planning.
Okay, thank you. Scott, on the phone? Any key messages?
No, I think you guys captured everything great.
Okay. Hey. Yes, Kenji? There's one other person. Who? James, I'm sorry. James, Northeast Oregon. Any key messages for us for next week? About herding cattle, don't say.
Yeah.
Okay, Kenji?
So can I take my time back?
No.
No. So my final thoughts, excuse me, I got a frog in my throat. What it really comes down to is vision, and what it really is about is clean water and conservation, and it really comes down to our DNA. You think about Mount Hood, the coast, high desert, all of it, it's all about the outdoors, and it's not a want. All these are needs, and make sure that's relayed. And it also spans everything from rural to urban, and I'm gonna steal this line. It goes from the guns, ammo, and camo crowd all the way to the urban environmentalists. It crosses economic and community lines, and what it really is what we want Oregon to look like in the future. We want a place where the outdoors is healthy, the plants are healthy, the wildlife is healthy. So I think that's one of the most important takeaways is what our vision is for the future of our state.
Okay. Jim and Alicia are riding like crazy, so thank you. Okay. Thank you all for your input. So Jim has the marching orders to take the plan now to redraft it and get it ready to go for the presentation next week, and then we'll have a 10-minute time frame with some questions to present. So now we'll move into public comment, and I understand Peggy on the phone. You have a Peggy Lynch. You have some public comment for us.
Thank you, sir. I appreciate it. I serve on EDAC and served on the work group that brought you 2402. I want to thank, first of all, the chair for your work and all of you as I've listened to you today and your thoughtful conversations. Speaking not only for your individual interests, but for the interests of all our audience. I do want to point out one thing about your choices, and I appreciate the fact that you at least came down to selecting the beverage container as one of your two options. You spent a great deal of time talking about the tax surcharge, how to craft it, how to explain it, how to deal with each individual interest, and frankly, are considering the beverage container percentage. It's 2 cents on a dollar bottle. It also hits out-of-staters, which means that we should be able to see, with the increase in a conservation plan, we should see increased tourism. We should be able to, through the process, at least address the issue of hunters and fishers' licenses and fees. But that conversation can be separate from how we fund ODFW. So that's all I needed to say. I just really wanted to say thank you for your good work today, and I will certainly be sitting in the back of the room and in the legislature in 2017 supporting funding for the ODFW.
Thank you. Anybody else? Public comment? Okay, I'm going to close the meeting by again thanking Brett. Oh, I'm sorry, you got a little bit more?
So, next steps in the process. So, we don't really know what those are. All we know at this point is we have two scheduled presentations next week. And we know that's not touching the legislature, it's just touching a couple of committees and a limited number of members. So we will, we collectively will need to do some further outreach to legislative members. I'm not sure what form that takes yet. The task force itself sunsets at the end of December in the legislature. So I think the big question on the table is, what do we have to do to develop a package and a process for moving this forward into the legislative session in February? And we have Measure 97 hanging out there that is going to take us one direction or another. It almost seems like we take a little bit of a hiatus until the outcome of the election and regroup.
Yeah, I would. Yeah, I was going to kind of close with that too, but I know we were supposed to give a report in September, which we're going to do, and everybody thinking, well, okay, we're done, thanks, you know, but probably not. So hopefully you'll stay engaged until we get to the end. So, Jim?
Well, I'm almost wondering if we couldn't schedule a meeting to deal with this equity issue before the election, and then come back after the election and say, okay, what does this mean in terms of the way we approach business groups? What does this mean the way we approach political influencers? The reality that they've learned in the Blue Ribbon panel is they all thought they were going to be done when they made their presentation last March, and the Blue Ribbon panel, the National Blue Ribbon panel, is now dealing with the communication and campaigning necessary to try to get this through Congress. I think it'll be our challenge as well. The strength of this group is our diversity and all the diversity of the groups we represent. It would be a huge mistake to basically lose that strength now that we're going to react to what the legislature has done and also what the election produces. We've got a short amount of time between then and when the legislature starts. If we just kind of throw our report on the table and aren't there to back it up and aren't there to participate with leaders, I think we have a high probability of this just going away. And so I don't want to see that happen. So what I'd suggest is let's schedule an interim meeting where we work on this equity issue so we guarantee we hold everybody at the table and don't have somebody getting upset and leaving, and then have another meeting after the election to basically talk about our communication strategy with a focus toward the media, the general public, entities we haven't reached yet, particularly business entities that will be so influential if we're going to use a livability and business climate message. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Coming from them will be more important than coming from us. Yeah. And then plan our communication strategy with the target for the start of the legislature.
Good advice. Yeah. Anybody else want to weigh in? Okay.
Quick question. So is it anticipated that once the report is finalized, everybody signs on?
Yeah. That's the intent, and I'm not quite sure if we can do that by next week. But
no, I didn't push that because consider this an interim report. And we're just testing the waters at this point with our interim recommendations. I had assumed we would regroup at some point, whether, as Jim suggested, sooner rather than later is up to you all.
And then determine whether everybody's thumbs up or sign on and deliver a final product.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was thinking that we signed it as the interim report, but it's not going to be the final report. But we're not going to be able to do that. So, yeah.
Final report by the end of December.
Okay. Thank you all for your time. I would like to say thanks all for your efforts, but we're probably still going to be meeting. So with that, we are adjourned.
Are you going to a duck game?
No, I wouldn't go to a duck game.
A beaver game?
I'm a beaver. Yeah.
So
I wouldn't go to a duck game.
A beaver game?
I'm a beaver. Yeah.